do you remember who I am, the Israel Palestine from last
week? I remember every person that ever comes through here, yes.
Okay. So before my new question, I do want to have a follow-up to that question. Do you have a reflection on the fact that Moon thought 8,000 people was the casualty count in Gaza?
No.
You don't think that's interesting?
I guess my guess is he just doesn't follow a lot of Israel-Palestine news about the war.
He's trapped in a cage with you most of the week.
Yeah, but we don't talk about the Israel-Palestine war.
He listens enough to you.
What is the point that the Gaza shit is underreported?
And that you might have a certain, you know, kind of set of narratives that you know, is my point last week.
Sure.
That...
Do you think that Mr. Mouton knows the death toll of the children in Yemen that starved to death under the Houthis?
Oh, wait. Was he talking to me? I
wasn't. Do you think he knows how many people died during the Iraq-Iran war? Do you think he knows how many people were killed by Hezbollah?
Wars.
Do you know?
Talk about those wars? Do you talk about those
No,
wars?
But I haven't really talked about Israel-Palestine for the last year either.
I haven't been here okay. for the past 2 or 3 years, so. Okay.
Do you think that he knows about the Syrian civil war deaths? I mean, like, what?
Come on. Okay, anyway, it's fine. We don't have to.
Wait, this is like adversarial. Who's going on now? What are we talking about? Who's dying?
I'm a friend. So, I'm an adversarial friend. So the topic I want to do today, I think related to last week, is that you are mind fucked on whether or not you want power. And you often accuse lefties of being confused as to whether they want to capture, wield, and exercise power. And I think the way in which it relates to last week is like the same thing with the Israel-Palestine debate, like you bucket people too hard. So I kind of want to go through an exercise. I even dragged over a whiteboard, so I'll turn on my camera so you can see it.
Oh boy.
If you wouldn't mind, around different demographics and whether or not you think they should be part of our in-group for the next election.
Okay.
Sweet. Let's start easy and then we'll like complicate it as we go. First one, well, so let me define in-group. I don't mean just people we should convince to vote for whoever the candidate winds up being, because that'll be too easy. Maybe people that we believe should be part of the conversation, even if they're not, you know, kind of agreeing to the entirety of it. And that, you know, from a voter perspective, we would want to be part of like the, if we want to call it the, like the Democratic tent. Do we want to complicate that definition, or are we okay with it?
No, I think that it's probably fine.
Okay. I'm going to use names first before we then go to demographics. Do you think Taylor Lorenz is part of this tent?
No.
Definitely. Can you say why not?
Spends the majority of her time, seems to be hyper-fixated on attacking people on the center-left, has been involved with like lies in her reporting, seems to be not a good-faith actor on the media landscape. Generally a bad duder, yeah.
So it's kind of like an evaluation of behavior over time.
I think for her specifically, yeah, more behavior than like political beliefs.
Okay. Fetterman?
I think, unfortunately, I think yes.
Tell me why.
I mean, he's a Democratic senator that I would hope is going to vote. I would hope with Democrats most of the time, although he did push that nomination through for, what is it, Dolan? That guy's name, Mullen or whatever. And he wasn't the singular person that stepped in between the war powers bullshit, right? That was like a House thing, no?
He definitely was not for war powers, if I remember one of his interviews.
I generally, if somebody's an elected senator, it's going to be hard for me to say no, unless they're actually like voting against the party like some disproportionate amount of time. So,
even so, remember that Democratic senator, what was it, Tim something, the one from West Virginia that gave up the seat? What was his name?
Manchin.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, what would you prefer that they just were Republican instead?
Well, yeah, but the difference is that Manchin in West Virginia, he was going to be the only Democrat to ever hold that seat. You can't necessarily say the same for Fetterman.
Sure, but like if they're, well, I mean, that's a good point. I guess I would say.
Yeah, that's the biggest argument against Fetterman. Otherwise, yeah.
Bassem Youssef.
Who?
Bassem Youssef.
Oh no! Fuck no! Fuck, what's the Patch Adams actor? Oh my god, Robin Williams. He's like the Arab Robin Williams guy. Is that who I'm thinking of?
I think he is more like, or he would classify his group would classify him more the Arab John Stewart, but sure.
Sure. Yeah, fuck that guy.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, I think he's like a hardcore. He seems to me to come. He comes off as like an Islamist. He's just like a crazy pro-terrorist.
He's not an Islamist.
Okay.
Why do you think he's an Islamist?
He has every single bullshit talking point about Israel-Palestine. Doesn't believe
somebody an Islamist. Do you know what an Islamist is?
Somebody who would advocate for an Islamic style theocratic regime to take over parts of the world or whatever, basically.
Do you think Bassem Youssef is an Islamist?
Yeah, when you have that many talking points, I don't know if he's come out and explicitly said it, but it wouldn't surprise me.
On Israel-Palestine, you're talking about it's an Israel-Palestine, make you want, you think he wants an Islamic theocracy to control the world? He lives in, I actually don't know where he lives.
I can take it down from Islamist, but he would be way the fuck out. That guy is fucking insane. Yeah, but it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know if he
makes him cross that line threshold.
The having every single meme, rumor, talking point about how evil the Jews are and how holy and blessed that Hezbollah
Mehdi.
I think Mehdi is in on like the outer perimeter, but I think Mehdi is in because he's like Mehdi will never ever mince words on whether or not it's worth voting for the Democrat candidate over the Republican.
Do you think Mehdi would be likely to try to kill the candidacy of anyone who doesn't fall on the right side of Israel-Palestine?
If they're in the primary, maybe, but in the general, I don't think so, no.
That's interesting. I think you're probably right. Okay. I know your answer to this, but I ask it for my follow-up question. Ezra Klein.
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay, tell me more about your mixed feelings.
He would always support the candidate. He would. He would just unequivocally be pro.
But why did you also groan at the same time?
Because I don't think he's understanding the moment we're in right now, and he grants way too much credence or leeway to people.
I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I've noticed, obviously, and I know why, but like, what do you think? Because like, you loved Ezra when you first started to watch him vigorously.
Uh-huh.
And you think he doesn't understand the moment. Was this the Kirk article? No, you kind of agreed with the Kirk article, I assume.
Kirk article, kind of the Hassan stuff. I just don't think he recognizes sometimes how to deal with political adversaries, is my feeling. Or he doesn't understand where their power comes from. Oh, and the Ben Shapiro interview as well. He just doesn't understand where the power comes from the other side, their ability to rewrite history and engage in like just open falsity and then to pretend that like we just need to...
Don't you think he has like a certain role to play?
Yeah, but it's never that role. There's no role I can think of where anybody can listen to Ben Shapiro just like tell the most ridiculous lies or mischaracterizations ever and just kind of
Do you think his Kirk article was good?
Not that much, no.
Okay, interesting. Because the Kirk article got a lot of interesting discourse that is maybe related to an overall pattern matching I'm trying to do across these groups, which is like my view on it, even though I thought that the whole political violence thing is bad, but at the same time I thought... You know, as part of the people who excused maybe some of the jubilee that happened on the other side of things, because, you know, kind of from a political violence standpoint, that's what they were feeling is like, oh, this person's kind of endorsed so much political violence over time. But when he then says, hey, he was doing politics the right way, or even when he has Ben Shapiro on, I see him as playing a role that he uniquely can play because he is this more long form considered
Yeah, but the only problem is these people haven't they haven't updated their understanding of what it means to have a conversation. So Ezra is trapped in the world where, oh, well, as long as somebody's talking, like, this is better than somebody killing, which is like kind of true, but it's like such a naive and uninformed view of how political power is working right now in the country that it bothers me.
See, I don't think you're wrong, but it does go to where I think you're also on the counter side being naive about it, but I don't want to go there. Okay. Somebody who throws a firebomb at Sam Altman's house.
No, but I also don't understand all the AI shit, so I just don't take a strong position on it. But generally speaking, I don't think we should be firebombing people's houses in the United States.
That one. What about people who comment on TikTok in support, but they obviously would not do it themselves, and they're kind of like reacting emotionally?
No, I don't. Generally speaking, I just don't think we should be celebrating people killing each other or shooting at each other or firing at each other for political reasons.
Do those people count as what you think would be a broad part of the coalition? Like,
They're part of the coalition, sure. But it's the thing that I should be careful about.
How do we interrogate that, though? I guess that's like the interesting thing that I think is, you know, going to go to a larger point I want to make. Like, how do we understand them commenting literally? And I know you probably don't use TikTok in like a very consumer oriented way, but like if you go to any of the posts about this, it's like, oh, where can we get him another firebomb and based, and it's like very pro the sort of the same way as the Luigi stuff went. How do you interrogate whether or not they're part of the in-group?
Generally speaking, it's going to be on whether or not, I guess, they support the Democratic candidate for winning the election. Yeah. But also, like, there are going to be some, like, viewpoints that I wouldn't agree with. But, like, there's also just, like, I don't agree with a lot of the assault weapon ban obsessions that Democrats have, but I don't think I would kick somebody out of the movement or be like, well, this guy just goes on gun control. Get him out of here. You know, I don't think that would be a...
but you would do that for Bossom.
For the guy, the crazy dude? Yes. Yeah, this is one of my problems also with, like, Ezra Klein did another article where I don't like... I just think he used the worst possible example he could have ever used in terms of broadening our coalition, and he was talking about including pro-life people into it, and I just thought that was just like barely like a step too far. It was just like the worst possible example. But yeah, there's going to be room for disagreement of views, but it can't be over something like, would you support the candidate? That's like a base level thing, yeah.
So let's pretend for a moment that we knew that they wanted to join the coalition, because I know that's going to complicate my next one. Who do I want to do first? There's an interesting pair. Fuentes.
Almost certainly not.
Why was it almost certainly not?
He's going to vote the candidate.
Generally speaking, he's not going to support the candidate.
Thank you.
And there are probably...
But no, I said, what if we got him there?
To support the candidate?
Yep.
I don't think it's somebody... You would accept the endorsement, but you wouldn't like try to appeal to that person at all, because there's going to be too many like fundamentally incompatible values, like stuff related to... white nationalism, Jewish conspiratorialism, anti-immigration views. There's going to be a lot of just like hardline, like fundamental ideological disagreement that is going to be irreconcilable, I would say.
Tucker.
No.
Same reason, I assume?
Basically, as Fuentes, yeah.
Okay, let's move from specific people to, you know, kind of groups. First one, let's use the notion, and you might not have as formed an opinion on this, and I can either guide or we can skip it, but a tech investor who was a Hillary voter in 16, was Biden in 20, Trump in 24, and is part of like the social class of the Mark Andreessens and David Sacks of the world. But yeah. It's not them.
Yeah.
But it's not them.
Yeah, I would say yes.
Why do they pass?
Because these people are fucking retarded. I don't think these people have like strong, super strong ideological disagreements. They just got sucked into some stupid fucking tech world shit.
Agreed. Okay. There's two groups of people that I think are the same, but I know you don't think they're the same, so let's, you know, kind of interrogate that first. Do you think people are anti the Iran war are mostly the same people who are anti the Ukraine war?
I think that everybody who is anti Ukraine war is probably it depends what you mean when you say anti both these wars. What do you mean by that? Sorry.
In the US domestically,
mm-hmm.
They want the wars to discontinue. And they express themselves socially that way.
They want the wars to continue.
To discontinue. Discontinue.
And they express socially. But even that's like I want the war in Ukraine to discontinue. But I mean, are you saying like discontinue as in like to stop as in like they like Ukraine surrenders to Russia?
No. So on the side of Ukraine, on the side of not Iran, because no one's on the side of the regime, but on the side of, you know, kind of Iran geopolitically in terms of I guess like the Trump dynamics, and this goes to the conversation we had last week, which might.
I think it would be really hard to separate this group. I could see it going 50-50 on both ways. Like there,
but
I could
so,
see.
Okay, so it's hard to separate, as in you think they're mostly the same person?
No, sorry, no. As in, like, no. It could be totally opposite. Like, I can see people who are really supportive of Ukraine, who are hawkish in general against things like Russia, who are also supportive of the war in Iran because they see that as being an adversary to Russia. The same way there might be people who are really supportive of Ukraine who would have been really supportive for the deposing of Maduro because they see Maduro as a threat to worldwide democracy or whatever. But I could also see people who are defensive of, like, Ukraine should have a right to defend itself, so they support Ukraine. Well, this would be my position, right? But I'm, like, kind of anti-Iranian war, not because I think the regime is good or shouldn't follow or whatever, but because I don't like the way the U.S. is approaching that war, and I'm against like the deposing of Maduro, and then I could see people who are like anti the Russia-Ukraine war just because they don't want us to be involved in it at all, but they're also anti the Iran war because they don't want us to be involved at all. They think Israel is controlling things. Like, I think there's a whole bunch of different views that could be here that could push people in so many different directions.
So let's take away like the strongly opinionated people and maybe this goes to like the same class that you think of the VC class as, I would posit that these are the same group of people, because these are people who are responding more so to the geopolitics than Trump than their knowledge of the specific situation. Do you think that's fair?
Okay. I would say broadly speaking, you have a group of people
in this crowd.
Sure. I think broadly speaking, you have like an isolationist group of people who are...
Or I'd say like a coastal liberal.
Coastal liberal is probably going to be maybe pro-Ukraine and... But they're also going to be anti-Iranian war now. It's really hard to...
That's kind of the dynamic, though, that I think is interesting. So maybe this gets to like a cross-section that I think is hard to... literally see, because they don't express themselves as a unit. But let's take the 25 to 35 year old knowledge worker.
Knowledge worker. What does that mean?
Office job.
Okay.
They're in tech, finance, consulting, marketing.
And we're asking.
They're both going to fall. Would you agree they both kind of fall into anti the war on the side of Russia, on the side of Ukraine, and the side of, again, not Iran literally, but on the side of us stopping what we're doing in Iran?
I guess, maybe, sure. Yeah.
Maybe. I think that's a very large portion of the populace, by the way.
Sure, it could be, yeah.
Okay. We definitely want them in, right?
Who want the war in Iran to stop and are kind of sort of on Ukraine's side, but they want that war to stop? Yeah, probably, yeah. I don't know if I'm ever excluding or including anybody based on like foreign policy views, because I feel like most people are pretty movable on a lot of this
stuff. Including Bassam on foreign policy views.
Well, I'm talking about ordinary voters. The Bassam is fucking insane. I don't think an ordinary voter, like even like the pro-Pali, like I don't think Hezbollah are terrorists and the Hamas has a right to rise up and defend Israel. I don't know if I would exclude these people, because I just, their views are oftentimes just not very.
Do you think the group we just talked about, the anti-war but like liberal coastal version, not the like strongly opinionated foreign policy people, do you think those people have a strong or small overlap with Hassan's audience?
I have no idea. This is too many levels deep. I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah, I could guess foreign policy positions of Hassan's audience with respect to certain conflicts, but like where that boils, like or how you cash that out, just like there are going to be people on the Hassan audience, for instance, when it comes to Russia Ukraine, there are going to be people who say they're pro-Ukraine because they think Ukraine has a right to defend themselves, but they also believe that Azov was majority Nazis, that there's a huge Nazi problem in Ukraine, and that Russia has a right to feel threatened by Ukraine because of NATO expansionism. Those people would consider themselves pro-Ukraine, and there are a decent number of people with that perspective. It wouldn't surprise me if a lot of Hassan's audience has that kind of perspective. But like they would be.
Ooh, maybe this
like
is useful as a separation. When we talk about Hassan's audience, let's talk about two different audiences. Tell me if you agree if these are two different audiences. One is, on stream. Am I?
Yeah, you're on stream.
Should I reverse myself? Can you guys read?
I don't know if they can read it or not, but I think it's always reversed. So you're fucked.
I'll reverse myself. Hold on. There we go.
Okay.
My bad. Wait, is Discord reversed or am I reversed? Discord is reversed.
It's fine now. I don't know what it is, but okay. It's fine. Yeah.
But that means it's Discord. Okay. Hassan's TikTok audience and Instagram audience, to me, is very distinct from his live audience.
Okay.
This does go to like his lifestyle content and like his, you know, orbiters or whatever you want to call him, his like streamer community. In that they're different, I guess. I don't know. What's literally true here, you know, I'm assuming a lot based off, again, the comments I see. It seems like his social media audience is primarily that demographic we're talking about, coastal mostly, or maybe not mostly, but more than his streaming audience, female, college educated, etc. I think they actually would vote very differently from his live audience.
Probably, yeah. His live audience is going to be the most, like, I would say, radicalized or whatever.
Right,
sure.
Right. And so in that, I guess, they don't have a strong opinion on foreign policy. They're going to maybe catch some of his content, but not, you know, kind of in the extremes. Where do you put them? Like, who do you think they overlap with? What else is true about that population? Or where else would you kind of circle them in terms of demographics that belong to the Democratic Party?
For which audience? For
the social media one, like his more mainstream lifestyle crowd.
Probably broadly speaking, they're just kind of like progressive-y types would be my guess, broadly speaking.
Do you think they have an opinion on IP?
Yeah, they're probably largely against the way that Israel's done the war. They probably broadly feel like it's like a genocide or whatever.
but low information.
Yeah, but probably not going to be broadly supportive, at least not as much as Hassan is, of like the Houthis and Hezbollah or whatever, and Hamas.
Okay. I'm going to call this next group, you know, kind of the elected left. So this is AOC, Ilhan Omar, whoever else you want to kind of put into the more progressive, what are they called, Justice Dems or whatever. What about them?
I think AOC is more moderate. I think like Ilhan and Rashid Tlaib are probably a little bit more aggressively, like more closer to Hassan's side, I would guess.
Would you say that they fall into a bucket we want as part of the in-group?
AOC, definitely. I'm not as sure about the other two, but...
Would you try to exclude them from the in-group?
They're elected, so probably not. I don't know if I'd waste the time on it, but I would have to investigate their beliefs more or whatever.
But if there are people other than... Would you try to not in-group, you know, in this, let's use Hassan as the useful example. Would you try to not in-group Bassem the same way, or would you not be as activated? If like Bassem starts to make the rounds more than he does.
Yeah, I think Bassem is worse than Hassan. Yeah, I think that Bassem dude is insane.
And would you activate to try to like outgroup him? Or
I mean, I would watch his stuff and I would speak about him that I think he's like a really horrible, terrible, toxic person. Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think there's as much of like a drive to say that like, oh, he's a Democrat who supports Democrats and is part of the Democratic Party and is campaigning with Democratic politicians. Like, I don't think he's ever... would be considered in that group of people, so it wouldn't be something I would think about as much, I guess.
And how does that then overlay into what you think about Ilhan Omar and such?
Well, they're literally part of our party. They're elected officials who are, you know.
But you still think that you might not want them as part of the in-group?
Yeah, I just don't know how much like anti-Democrat stuff they do. I don't think they do that much. I'm pretty sure I would want them. I just know they tend to be like, these are like the two most radical members of the party, so I would just have to like look up more on what they believe and everything. Yeah.
Okay. Who have we missed? What other interesting? Oh, Hanania.
Probably not.
Tell me more.
He's a conservative, right?
Why are my markers dying? He's a conservative in the same way as. What would I? Classify him right now. Like you don't think he's going to wind up voting for the Dem in the next election? He's definitely going to vote for the Dem.
He might, but he's not part of our group. He's a conservative.
Interesting. So tell me more. So if he...
His support for the Democratic Party would come more out of a horrendous distaste for how crazy and horrible the current MAGA shit is. Not like he suddenly is aligned with the Democrats on a ton of policy.
So there's like a right reasons thing that you have going on here. Am I hearing that right?
What do you mean by that?
Like you're looking not only that they align for this election, but that they do it for the right reasons.
Well, I have different standards for different people in terms of what they market themselves as. Like Hanania doesn't pretend to be a Democrat. So like I don't have to, he's not included. It wouldn't even be a question of including him in like the Democratic coalition because he's just not a Democrat, right? So like same thing with like
I mean, do you
Liz
think there's
Cheney.
A chance that he, and I don't mean him literally because he's too caustic for this, but like a person like him in the same way that what's her face? Liz Cheney got invited to things like that. That this sort of thing happens leading up to 28.
I don't think I would. It would depend on, I guess, the vibes of everybody. But I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that as long as people know what he is. Like if people were inviting Hanania to events, to Democratic events, with the understanding that he's like a Democrat and is going to, you know, be with Democrats, I would be opposed to that. But if it was so like
self-classification is important.
Well, not self-classification. I mean, what he is. It's not like I don't think he would contest this.
The combination of self-classification plus because we can't look at like he could decide to say I'm a Democrat. I plan to vote for Democrats.
Well, if he became a Democrat, then I would change my mind on him. But he's like he is a Republican and conservative. He has conservative beliefs and values. I think he would say openly he's got conservative beliefs and values. It's not like a contentious topic, and nobody's like confused about that. Nobody looks at Hanania. They're like, oh, this is like what the new Democrat is going to be. It would be Hanania. Or I'm sorry, it would be Hanania is like a conservative. That's how it would be viewed. Yeah.
Counterpoint's kind of in a similar place.
Yeah, exact same place. Yeah. But I think you would also agree though. Yeah.
Zoran.
I think pretty squarely in our camp. Yeah.
Tell me more.
I mean, he's an elected official. He supports the party. He recognizes there's a broad diversity of candidates that can perform well in different districts with different coalitions of voters. Yeah.
What have we missed and what groups have we missed? We have Taylor, Fuentes, Fetterman, Tucker,
mm-hmm. Wait.
Awesome.
Let me use the restroom real quick. Yep. Hold on. One sec.
Okay. Hey, Moon, how do you feel about the 8,000 thing?
I am currently working on my monitor. I'm not listening to anything you morons are talking about.
You last week, or during the week, he asked you how many casualties happened in Gaza, and you said 8,000 when the number was like 70, depending on who
you're listening to. Yeah, I don't know anything about Israel-Palestine.
But you're here all the time.
Okay, he never talks about it.
Never. It's a banned topic. I mean,
not really when I'm here. He did it for like 3 years that I wasn't here.
He does it every day.
Well, then why didn't you bring it up last week when you were talking to him, retard?
Israel-Palestine? You're right.
Well, no, you brought up Israel-Palestine. That's what you talked about, I feel like, most of the time, but you didn't bring up the amount of numbers of people dying.
No, I think it's interesting. The reflection that I have is that you then, 2-3 days later, were I don't remember why he asked you that question, and you said 8,000. I was like, look at our poor gaslit friend, Mr. Mouton, because my whole point last week, if you remember, was like, he is upstream of his audience's views, and his audience's views are completely brain broken on the topic of IP because of what he chooses to cover.
Sure, but I wasn't here for fucking the 2 years that he was covering Israel-Palestine. No,
he still covers Israel-Palestine every day.
Okay, all right. I mean, you're right.
I mean, even when he's like looking at a Hassan video, he's covering Israel-Palestine because that's what Hassan talks about.
Okay, it's a
I'm not accusing you of anything. They're evil. You're upset. I just want to know how you feel.
Israel's evil. It's a genocide, man.
Fair enough.
How many people died in Ukraine?
Oh, man, you guys went over this too, and I don't... I think it's... total of the two of them, I think, was like 1 to 2 million plus. Ukraine was what, 100 to 200,000?
Right. That is just in, I think, Mariupol or whatever.
You guys went over these numbers in that same conversation, I think.
Yeah.
He
talks about Ukraine all the time. Why don't you know?
He doesn't actually talk about Ukraine in the same way.
What is the general point you're trying to make with the 8,000 thing?
I think Stephen gaslights his audience. Not on purpose.
What do you mean about that, like, more specifically?
Because of you. Did you listen to my conversation last week?
I don't remember it, to be honest.
I was the one on, Anna came on, what came on? It was Israel-Palestine.
Okay, wait. Also, as a quick thing, okay, I don't know if you've caught this or not. You might have even used this criticism against me last time, but yeah, we haven't really talked about Israel-Palestine that much over the past year and a half. That's usually,
it is true. Every day.
It is, no. What?
Because you watch Hassan videos, you watch Bassem videos, you watch Mehdi videos.
That's not covering it. These guys don't talk about Israel-Palestine. None of those people really talk about Israel-Palestine.
Do you really think that part of his 8,000 wasn't some sort of asymmetry in how you cover the content?
I'm not trying to shit on Mouton, but no, I don't think that. I just don't know if
I'm not trying to shit on Mouton either, right?
Yeah, I think the average person doesn't have a mind for what high numbers or if atrocities or anything are at all ever.
First of all, Mr. Mouton is highly above average. Second.
Yeah, but in terms of like understanding war deaths, would you consider yourself decently above average?
No, but your content has an asymmetry that would lead someone to not realize what's going on one side of the equation. That's my point.
Okay, I understand what you're saying because you already have a narrative that is literally unchangeable.
Do you not think that's a
little
bit fair?
No, it's not. Because
by the way,
no, wait, stop, let me finish. I know this because the main attack for calling me a Zionist sellout is that I stopped covering the war once Israel started to look bad. For the people that are my haters, that's the main talking point that they use. So if you to come in and say, actually, I cover it a ton, I just cover it asymmetrically, whatever, it literally doesn't even make sense. No, it's not. This is not a real, what was the last time we went over any significant thing related to Israel-Palestine on the same stream? Can you even remember a single time?
What?
What is the last time over the past year? When have I covered anything significant?
When you say cover, I think you're using that word very specifically. You saying you don't significantly cover a topic, or are you talking about researching, an incident heavily?
Either of those things. I don't think I've done much at all of Israel-Palestine for like the past year.
Am I? No, no way.
Okay, give me an example.
Every day.
Okay,
day.
Today,
like
yesterday,
example.
The day before. What is the thing?
I don't like. It's so pervasive. That
the last time I remember was three call-ins ago when a guy came in and was really trying to get Steve to say the word evil about how Israel is apparently like causing people not to eat in Gaza, and that would have been 3 to 4 weeks ago.
We literally had a call-in day last week about Israel-Palestine.
Yes.
Oh, true. Okay, so that would have been the last time, I guess.
No.
But even on that day for Collins, it was not really anything specific to Israel-Palestine. It was like,
Yes, it was. That was literally the point of the day.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
When I say specific to Israel-Palestine, then maybe we're just saying different. What I mean is like talking about like the facts on the ground, the actual events that are occurring, or it could be like some historical analysis or whatever. Not like, is Israel bad or do we think that we should not support Israel? Like, that's a different type of conversation. So when we talk
that's
about...
Fair.
Sure. That's what fair. I mean when I say... So like whether or not... So one thing we did talk about quite a bit was whether or not Netanyahu kind of goaded Trump in the United States into going to war with Iran, which is a thing that I did cover. But I don't think talking about it or not talking about that is going to give somebody some insight into the death toll in the war. I don't think we've talked about anything related to that war for a long time. And a lot of people have no mind for, like, well, what is a high number of deaths or a low number of deaths? It's just not a thing that
that's,
comes
that's all
up
fair, and I guess if you,
wait, here's
if
a question.
You don't follow
wait,
any other
question,
things
here's
I said.
Here's a question. Mutin, do you know how many girls died in that school building explosion or whatever?
This in Iran?
Yeah.
I do know. I think it was like 112.
Okay, there. So he knows that. That's an asymmetric thing that's bad on the U.S. and Israel, right?
Wait, what?
What?
Why does him knowing that mean anything?
Well, because you were trying
what
to
about, wasn't it 200?
I thought it was. I thought it started at like 130 or something, and then I don't know if it's gotten higher or lower
or something. Yeah,
but like he's in the sure it might be higher now. I haven't followed up recently, but like that's an asymmetrical thing, which is just a bad thing on the U.S. and Israel, and not a good thing on.
No, asymmetric. By the way, when I use that word, I'm talking about your amount and intensity of coverage. I'm not talking about the intensity of or the asymmetry of the morality of it.
You're talking about the asymmetry of me fixating on the ills of one side and the pros of the other.
Exactly.
And that would be what I just gave you as an example of the ills on our side.
That was like a very isolated incident in a day where we started a world event. I don't know why that's the same thing. Okay. Because it's not a collection of casualties over time. I mean, you can groan, but it's not the same thing.
Okay.
Okay. By the way, did you read my email? Did you see my email?
Yeah, both of them.
Okay. So, you know, fair enough on the Hassan part. I'm not trying to, you know, trap you. I'm trying to have, you know, kind of a conversation where, unfortunately, you make me watch a lot of Hassan. So, like...
That's fine. I'm just saying that nothing... This is not, like... It's not proving a point, I think. I think if Mutin was here when I was actively doing the Israel-Palestine stuff, and you would ask Mutin, why does Israel feel it needs to defend itself with violence against the Arabs? And he could name a ton of reasons for that. And then you would ask him, okay, why do you think Palestinians feel the need to engage in violence against Israel?
I think it's a useful 19th fact. Not, I'm not using not. It as my
okay.
primary.
All right, okay.
Anyway, let's go back to the board.
Gotcha.
By the way, can we talk about the second topic sometime this week?
What is the second topic?
The Mahan thing. I think that race, unless they're like, is suddenly going to go away with it, is kind of dangerous.
The Mahan thing?
Matt Mahan, the VC investor pick for California primary that is secretly like a very Trump-allied person that entire class of tech and Twitter is trying to make seem like a normal Democrat.
Maybe, sure.
Okay. So, back to this. So, any other groups we missed? Anything you think is not on the board?
Not that I can think of. I don't even know what we're making groups for, so.
People, who's in the Dem party that isn't on this board?
Take the Jews out of there. Or just all of them.
Jesus. Oh, anybody that, like, is actually, like, a socialist or communist. Not that, like, calls themselves.
How do we define that?
Anybody that is for the abolition of all capital.
Anybody in the DHS?
Anyone who, okay, this is interesting. People who comment that on Twitter and TikTok or people who like have a theory of power?
Okay, never mind. Get rid of it then if we don't understand it. Never mind.
Wait, it's not that I don't understand. Is that not different?
I'm saying for people that are actually socialists or communists, not people that just say they are, but I don't know if we have a way to differentiate that.
Do you not think that's somewhat...
So,
I guess like a lot of the socialists...
Never mind.
A lot of people call themselves socialists or you would call socialists, I would say don't have a high...
Rewind.
Don't
have a high... Forget I said it. That's why I said forget I said it.
This wasn't an argument. Why is everything an argument? This is okay, let's helpfully define...
Nope, there is no way to define it. That's why I'm saying it's not worth it. Because if, like I said, if somebody calls themselves a socialist, I would still consider themselves probably decently close to me politically because nobody even knows what the fuck that means. That's why I said forget it.
Doesn't matter if they agree ideology.
Yeah.
If they say that again?
No, I don't think they
don't agree ideologically. That's my point.
I think you would dispute that. I think you would just say that all those people are communists and like them being soft communists.
Do you think a Zoran voter who says, I'm a member of DSA, voted for Zoran, but before that voted for every Dem, mainstream Dem
DSA
for the past 10 years?
DSA member is significantly different, though.
Sorry, hold on. DSA member is different than someone who's like, I think I'm a democratic socialist.
Yes.
Do we not remember that most of these populists are more of what I just said and not like I'm a member of the DSA? Like people who say they're a member of, or like they might be a democratic socialist are not members typically of DSA. Like
how
most people
large
do not
how many members
that.
are in the DSA in New York City?
Not that many.
Okay.
Look it up. DSA members, and
so what? What are we? What is the point that we're proving here?
I think most of those people don't have 13, strongly held beliefs. 13,000. So nothing. Basically zero. That rounds to zero.
Yeah, but that if there aren't that many people in it, then my guess is the people in there probably tend to have stronger beliefs than like an ordinary person.
Yes, but that's my point. Is most people who, and this is where I wonder about bucketing for you, and this is the point that we can get to if you want to right now, but like I want to talk about bucketing. So you right now are not helping me distinguish between whether we're talking about the 13,000 people in the DSA or the people who would say I'm a democratic socialist and voted for Zoran and got excited about Zoran. Are those two distinct buckets to you?
I don't know. I don't know if I would ever even meaningfully talk about like these people.
Okay, here's my theory of power and where you're missing and where I think you no longer care about power or you're getting distracted, and I think it'd be useful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that bucket that would call themselves a democratic socialist, would not be a member of the DSA, is the preponderance of New York liberals and who we do want to convince of more centrist positions that you bucket very quickly into being pro-Pali, Hassan, socialist, nonsense, and this is my whole pain point that I've been trying to bring up with you this conversation, last conversation. The preponderance of the voters, the people who are active, you know, kind of New York life, are clearly not in the DSA, as we just heard, but would probably say, oh yeah, I think I'm a democratic socialist. Like, that's a thing they'd say at a bar. Mm-hmm. And that is a majority of who we would want to convince of wanting to move the party to take behaviors that are more aligned with what we think the world should look like.
Okay.
What do you think of that statement? And we can go back to the board for it.
Sure. Let's see where this.
Hold on. When you say sure, this is your entire flaw.
Because I don't know. I don't know where you're going with this. I don't know. I'd never in my life. I don't usually attack the voting people. I usually don't attack the people that are the supporters of Hassan. I usually am going after the content creators themselves or the messengers themselves.
But here's the thing, and this is my point to you last week. Here's the thing. The question is whether you want to help capture power, wield power, and do things with power.
So
and right now,
what I'm saying,
don't.
Can we? You can,
if this is,
here's what
if
you're
this
trying
is,
to do. You're trying to get me to commit to some position that you can do a gotcha on me later on, which generally I don't mind. You are.
Hold on.
Which I generally, I don't mind that, because I don't mind answering a question, but we think
I
might change it later.
Gotcha.
But what I'm saying is you're trying to get me to like agree to some differentiation thing so that you can...
Pause. Steven, seriously. Why do you think I'm trying to gotcha you?
One, you're trying to prove a point. You set out at the beginning of this conversation to prove a point. And then two, I'm guessing that the reason why you're quizzing me on these different groups of people is because you're setting out to prove some inconsistencies I'm going to have between a bucketed group of people I would here that would stand in opposition to a stated goal that I have.
But,
like,
but for what end do you think I have? What end do you think I have?
I don't know yet. I have no idea. I don't know where we're going here yet. But
as a person,
as a side effect that you tried to get me on Mr. Mood not knowing the fucking current death toll of the Israeli Palestinian war. But
I think that's interesting. I thought you liked confrontation. I thought you want someone to challenge you rather than just like have these milquetoast things, these loser positions.
Yes, we can do it, but like get to the fucking point. I don't know what I'm agreeing.
Okay, let's get to a high level point first. If I'm trying to gotcha you,
if somebody were to ask me right now, if somebody were to hard press me, like, do you think there's a difference between a Shia Muslim and a Sunni Muslim, and it's a conservative in the United States, and the subject matter of our conversation is whether we should ban all Muslims from immigrating to the United States, I'd probably just say, I don't know, no, probably not really. And then if one guy all of a sudden was like, really, you say that? Well, these people believe that they can trace Muhammad's descendancy, and the other group don't. So you don't think it's a difference? It's like, well, no, fuck. I guess you got me. Fuck me. Like, I don't know where we're going with this conversation, so I don't really know how to answer the questions. You're trying to keep it vague and amorphous for a gotcha. That's the only reason this would be vague and amorphous. Otherwise, you just tell me what the end goal is, and then I can answer the questions.
I'll tell you the end goal.
Yeah, Jesus.
I thought it would be more interesting for you if we worked our way to it.
It is, but it's hard for me to answer the question because I don't know exactly what it is that you're
answering.
That's what
I'm trying to gotcha you. You don't have to assume the bad intent. Again, you're bucketing.
I don't mind if
right?
you're trying to get me. I just don't know what...
Okay, I'm not trying to get you. I'm not trying to get you. Let me say the point. I am a... Other than, you know, kind of the... Israel-Palestine issue, I'd probably... And even that now, at this point, am a mainstream liberal, mainstream Democrat. Most of my positions are, you know, kind of a regulated capital market. I am for certain versions of a wealth tax, but that are considered of things like capital gains and other things of that nature. I'm not for free buses. I'm not for free grocery stores. I don't mind those experiences being done. I think that this... position, your position for the most part, again, except for Israel-Palestine, is losing. It's the loser position, as you put it last week, in a lot of ways, to a more activated left. I've been concerned about that for a long time. Before Zoran, and even that weekend, I think I mentioned this last time on stream, and I can't remember, going into the weekend of the primary, I live in New York, I was planning to rank Cuomo in the primary. Before I got negatively polarized on Twitter, I sat the primary out, and then I became a Zoran superfan. So I am of the position, though, that like the policies of Cuomo, let's put it that way, are the ones we want as a liberal party. We should want people to have the sense of like a pro-welfare, but pro, you know, kind of capitalism and free markets version of the world. It's currently a complete loser position. There is no one making a good argument for that, including you. There's like, would you agree or disagree with that? Let's take the you out of it. Let's take do you think there's a mainstream...
As opposed to what?
The lefty version of the argument. All the arguments that are winning right now are Bernie-crat arguments.
Yeah, you know? I think those are, I think they're dark shit. I think that's a, I think they're
I'm not saying whether they're good or bad in your analysis. They're winning the polity. They're winning the liberal...
They're gaining ground. Right, I don't know if they're actually... I don't know if they're at, like, a majority position or plurality position in the party yet. I'm not.
I mean, they're on the mainstream podcast now that used to be like Positive America.
I'm talking about
a bunch
people
of
who are voting and like.
You don't think this influences those?
I didn't
those,
say it didn't
audiences?
Influence. You asked me if it was the mainstream position of the voters right now, and you're giving me what people are saying on podcasts, and I'm acknowledging that it's
you
growing
don't think
in popularity.
That affects the mainstream voter.
I didn't say it didn't affect it. You're dodging. You're going through a different thing. Saying effect.
I'm not dodging.
If you wanted to ask me,
you said stop.
I'm telling you exactly what was said. You're asking me if that is the mainstream position of the average voter. I said no, and you said, do you think it's affecting them to be on podcasts? Yes. That's why I said it's getting more popular. I don't think it's the mainstream position yet. Do you have polling data that says opposite to that?
Yes. Remember,
okay,
we talked about this with...
Then just show me that. Why talk about what's on podcasts?
Fair enough. I don't have polling data readily available. Okay. I can try to actually ask AFR while we talk.
Okay.
But you said something last week about, you know, we talked about the Israel-Palestine thing, and I was pointing out to you that we went from like 12 to 15% of the Democratic Party being pro-Palestine to now this year, I think it's like 52 to 60-something percent. I can pull that up.
Sure.
Is that something you would be surprised by?
No, I think that's all the polling data that I've seen. Yes.
Right. So do we not see the left's argument, at least on this one issue, right? Do we not see that they are beginning to affect the polity?
Yes, but I've never in my entire life disagreed with that statement. So I don't know why you're presenting this as though it's a revelation. Yes,
about
people
Israel, Palestine,
online,
or about the left?
About literally anything. The online discourse has an impact on real life thought that people have. Yes.
Okay, so I guess let me get to the end because you still seem to think I'm trying to get you. I think across some of these groups, the question that I have is when we decide they're worth, you know, our in-grouping, right? And so in-grouping, you know, again, we can, you know, call that a couple different things. Are we willing to hear them out? Do we treat them as an adversary? Do we try to persuade them? All these sorts of things. And I can't tell if there's a consistency, and I'm not trying to do a gotcha, we can explore it. I can't tell if there's a consistency with you as to why someone's in that in-group or not. And one of the challenges I think that provides, because I think you react so instinctively now to this, you have like a native, again, IP is the thing that controls it. Maybe it's HP related reaction to a lot of these people who I think are actually the main audience you should want to reach. The example that I'll give you is this group that calls themselves socialist, but doesn't have strongly held opinions. And this is the point I made last week about Israel-Palestine. These people are low information. Your audience, even though they yelled at me in the comments after last week, is low information. Hassan's audience is low information. So too is this preponderance of coastal liberals. Like, they have an opinion. It might be drawn by a few articles, but most people are not doing what you're doing in trying to define a theory of the world, theory of power, theory of international relations. So they have all of their opinions. They might be strongly, strong opinion loosely held. So even if they vocalize a strong opinion, it's probably loosely held. And these people want to hear the loser positions. And I'm trying to figure out if I can tell why you don't want to reach them. Because I'm looking at some of these other reasons you do or don't want to reach people or think they should be part of the in-group. And with Bossum, it seems to be like there's a worldview you think he has. Fuentes, Tucker, and Hanania, it is that you don't think they are true to the cause. Justice Dems, you were kind of a mixed bag on. Mehdi, you said yes because you think he'll support the candidate in the general, no matter who it is. Fetterman, you kind of had the same vibe. He votes with us. Taylor, no, because of bad behavior, it sounds like. Do you think her bad behavior is intentional?
Lorenz, yes. She's crazy.
Yeah. Well, sorry, but crazy could mean like she still believes in what she says. Do you think she believes in what she says, or do you think she's like...
I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. I wouldn't treat her as a good faith actor, though.
So then, if we hear all of those reasons about, you know, kind of why you would or wouldn't, why don't you want to reach this audience that I'm talking about? The people who are very intrigued by Bernie because Bernie's good at catchphrases, Hassan because they might be women who fall in for lifestyle content, again, I'm not talking about his live stream audience, right? Like, what is it that prevents you from thinking of this as someone? And again, maybe you go like, I would want to persuade them, but I'd go, most of your content turns them off at first glance. I'm not talking about the way you talk. I'm talking about like the intensity, A, of how you talk about one or other sides of the issue. So there's not content of you kind of giving lenience to things that they are currently trending towards in terms of things they care about. And you're not putting forth these interesting arguments. If we go to like your whole point that you think you have loser positions, I'd say they'd actually be really receptive to your loser positions because they don't have strongly held opinions. They haven't heard Hassan or AOC or, I know AOC is more mainstream now, but like, and Bernie go through these very left positions on wealth tax and how we would actually do that on housing policy. Like, why don't you think they would listen to you or be persuaded by centrist position, not just you, right? Why do you think these loser positions can't be persuasive to this audience?
I think it could be.
Okay. I think
it could. I just don't generally have the opportunity to either communicate with those audiences usually because those content creators know that they don't want to be...
Well, oh, really interesting. So When you say those content creators, you're talking about like the podcasters.
Sure, yes.
At this point, do you think, I know that we want their audiences and this is, you know, every content, you know, startups think the same way about marketing, et cetera. We want to borrow other people's audiences. But like, I think you don't need to think of that as the main channel. Like, you are seen by these people all the time. But in clips, right?
Only, like, yeah, but only through opposition framing, right?
No, I mean, I've seen, and I'm like forgetting specifics, but I feel like, you know, there have been times where mainstream broadcasters on, like, I don't know if it's specifically like CNN in the world have like retweeted the things you've said.
Oh, if you're talking about stuff that's being clipped on my social media, I mean, most of those things are going to be like oppositional to Republicans or conservatives, not like me attacking Hassan or leftists.
Right, but I guess my point is Hassan, like his content about you is not what's driving a lot of views, but for him and in general for like your awareness.
Sure, but my content about Hassan is not generally what's driving a lot of my views on my clipping.
Right,
stuff.
And so my point is, why are you so concerned about these other people's audiences versus a wealth of positing the loser positions? Let's just use that as a frame, right? Like, if you talked more about the loser positions, then you might be going like, okay, what does this look like? I have ideas. I don't know that I know the good answer. But my point is, you don't make those loser position arguments. You just attack the what you perceive as the bad arguments.
Can you ground this out in an example? I'm getting lost in this. I don't know what you mean. Give me some examples or something.
What did you talk about today? Can you just remind me, like, what are we early in the stream?
I don't
know. We didn't do shit today.
We haven't
kind of, like, watched some things, right?
Shitty videos all day.
It was about Jordan Peterson's daughter, it was about Jordan Peterson and the medical treatment that he got sent someplace, and...
What's the last thing you covered that would be, like, a not Hassan version of a bad argument, like a lefty argument, but wasn't Hassan or Bassem, like someone who you don't find ideologically problematic.
Say that again.
Clarify.
I'm trying to find a non Hassan or Bassem example where you're covering a lefty position recently.
We watched a little bit of a Gary Economics video, I guess.
Yeah, but you also kind of hate him.
Yep.
Okay. Let's posit that that's one of the challenges is that you do react a lot, react content. Most of the time when I think you cover some of this stuff, let's take the wealth tax as an example, actually, because I feel like that's one of the things you mention often that you don't like because you think, and I mostly agree with your at least some of your nuance here, you think a lot of these things are out of animus as opposed to out of policy.
Sure.
I think that's a good example of a time where if you got into the details of the argument... Because often, I think that argument is you reacting to Hassan saying it, to Gary saying it, to there's that weird guy that Hassan just did the campaigning with, that he has that stupid, if you're sick, it's the corporations, if you're whatever, it's the whatever corporations.
I'll say it or whatever, guy. Yeah.
Like, all of your content about that, except for, like, these two-liners you give, which I do think are the right way to think about it, is like, hey, yes, this might or might not be useful, but we have to stop putting in the case of animus because... For it to be persuasive and effective, et cetera, it should probably be in the frame of what it would do for policy or for budgets. But I think you only give that the 5 seconds to 10 seconds because most of the time you're reacting to the people you perceive as being enemies. If that's the only content available about you, both that you distribute, that other people distribute about you, and there isn't this, okay, let's talk though about what it would look like. And there are a variety of ways that could look. Then these people will never find home with you, even if they could, because they need an invitation. right? Because their issue, anyone who, again, is, let's call it strong opinions or weak opinions loosely held, that is generally in our tent, needs some sort of an invitation, right? It's like, okay, what is the thing I think this guy said? And is it said in a way that allows me to enjoy it? So, for example, if someone identifies, and whether or not they should, with Hassan, or they identify with Bernie, or they identify with that guy, the one running that said the corporation thing, they're going to immediately feel that they're, from an identity perspective, they can't join in your critique or your ideas because you've made it oppositional. The same thing with the pro-Pally stuff, right? As soon as you and I start to chat, right, I can handle it, but like as soon as you begin with 17 insults before we get to continue the conversation, the question then becomes, if that's someone's only invitation, or they're not going to view it as an invitation, because it immediately becomes an identity argument that they can't.
Is the whole thing here that you think that I should have videos, or I should talk about just like positive defenses of my more liberal positions instead of attacking the leftist positions? Is that?
I guess, but it's more. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like last week.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. Sure.
It's tone. It's not just tone, though, Primind. I think, like, and again, this is where I don't have like a singular idea, but I do have like a thought. I think we, like, the thing that you do, and again, like most of the streams, I feel like when we go back to Israel-Palestine, that's one of the values of them, is this intensity of the argument and the research that on some of these loser positions would be very convincing. Because I, you know, my politics don't come from you. Stephen, I was in Democratic politics for a little bit and I'm strongly opinionated, but they mostly align with you. And I actually think you have a way of communicating both the research and debating with that research that is more persuasive than a lot of the other people on the center left, or let's call it like the mainstream liberal position. But I think most of the people who do it right now do it poorly, don't do it, are afraid to do it, a seeding ground to the left. But if you can go into those detailed arguments without only using a foil and starting with the use of the foil, then you invite people who, again, these are like friends of mine in New York. Again, let me use the Zoran primary as an example. When that Cuomo-Zoran primary was going on, before I decided to change my own position, I was talking to people about why I thought free grocery wasn't going to work. I was talking about why rent freeze may or may not work if it has to be super limited. Here's how, you know, I was like, here's the position against Zoran. I convinced a few people until I, right that weekend, decided to take it back, that they should move from a Zoran vote to a Cuomo vote. Because I think these arguments are persuasive, but no one makes them well. The last person to make them well on any sort of broad stage was Obama.
Okay, has this just been the longest way ever to say that I need to just make better positive arguments for like liberal positions or whatever?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think of these audiences very differently.
I don't know about that. So I don't necessarily disagree with you, but when I'm arguing policy as it stands right now, I'm generally going to be arguing policy related to the Republican movement in the United States, because I just think that, I mean, that's the opposition party, and that's going to be like the huge, that's like the number one prevalent political thought right now in the United States. But I wouldn't necessarily mind arguing policy related stuff with people on the left, but they frame this argument as like an ideological one where the people over there, I don't think they're engaging with this on the policy level. Like if we wanted to sit down and have like a debate with people who are educated about whether or not, you know, all of society needs to abolish capital versus whether or not you can have capital ownership, I don't know if that is a winner policy position that I can have, because this discourse has been so poisoned by people on the far left and the sloppiest thing anyway. Like if this was like a judge debate and I've got to argue in favor of pharmaceutical companies or something, or I have to argue in favor of, you know, corporations existing, I'm confident that I go win that debate. But if it's like, can you make this argument to an ordinary public person whose starting position is everybody who's rich is in the Epstein class and pharmaceutical companies just jack up drug prices because they like to see us suffer and die? I don't, that's a whole other, but this is also part of why I would like to exclude people like Hassan and all these other people from the left, or at least from the Democratic Party, is because they're poisoning a lot of these arguments by the way they talk about it anyway. But so I mean, I could probably...
So I have three questions about that. That's interesting. So the first is...
And then on the last thing too, a lot of the framing of my positive arguments usually come through when I'm having debates with political figures, and I can have debates with people on the right. Nobody on the far left is going to be open to having those debates, so I don't get to flesh them out either there. It's just going to be me talking about it on stream, basically.
A quick comment about that before my three questions. I do think like... And you kind of did this in a good way, I think, with... what's his name? Peter, with the COVID stuff. Like, you digging into material and then having like... an expert or a nerd on the other side of that, I think actually was working back in the day. I know like timelines of what was going on was probably different than it is now. But so the first question I have is, when you say, you know, you think you're reacting to the Republican Party and you're talking about the ideology stuff, we're not really in policy. Like, you're not reacting to policy anymore. You're reacting to, like, violation of norms. Like, the only argument happening from that side right now that you are reacting to has absolutely nothing to do with any of these positions. They have to do with, let's call it meta positions about a fascist, like, and the people enabling him. So I don't think that that's...
I guess, but it's they're still, like... What is the direction that the country should be going in? Like, what should our immigration look like? What should our...
Well, people either are pro-fascist or not. That is a dead end. I mean, and I'm not saying it's not good content, but I would say it's not you currently reacting to counterpositions to the things you hold to be true.
I disagree, but I mean, I guess you could define away the question there. So, but I would argue it's reductive. I don't know how to respond to that. What do you mean? Like, there are people in the United States who think the president should be able to unilaterally control the country. I think that's a position that's worth fighting against, because a lot of people on the right...
Yeah, but and fair do that, but I'm saying that's a separate thing. They're not also talking to you about healthcare. Like, that's, you know, like the other stuff that hopefully in a post-Trump world we're actually talking about, or we're talking about internally to the party, is not the same topics as with this group of people, because to your point, they're you know, kind of in a pro-fascist delusion. It's not policy-oriented.
I mean, I disagree. I mean, we're talking about, like, the border and what should be done with legal immigrants, and is ICE, you know, allowed to operate?
I guess you could say some of them are, but like Trump and his admin, when you're reacting to them, aren't even making that argument anymore.
Okay, I don't know what the point of this distinction is, but I'll grant it, I guess. I don't know.
Okay,
sure.
The second is on the notion of you know, kind of this populace that, you know, what we want to call this the normal person. How do you think they get a preponderance of their opinions? Like, what do you think is the this is like a genuine, I'm curious, like, all the ways, like, obviously social media, whatever, but like, do you think like a person who follows a lot of, let's say, Twitch political streamers, but for a lifestyle content, let's say they might have hit Hassan, but they aren't following him on, you know, live streams and politics. They think they like AOC, but again, haven't been following her closely. What do you think is their current digest? Where does it come from?
Probably almost still, exclusively social media, would be my guess. So scrolling on Instagram or Twitter, and then whatever their friends are talking about.
Do you think they're interested in hearing? Again, let's use the loser position.
No.
Because
it doesn't feel good.
So I'll use the Luigi thing as a good example. Mm-hmm. I feel like. I don't know if this is like extreme. Tell me what you think. Like 60 to 70% of people who voted Dem are also the type of people who like would comment on social media about that right now, or like back when it happened, and be like, you know, he had it coming. Would you think that's too high of an estimate?
I think it's way too high and over indexes for younger people. I think that number's probably a lot lower, but just because like older people are probably going to be a little bit more like, oh, that's kind of fucked up. But it's probably way too high of a number, much higher than I would be comfortable with. Yeah.
What would you estimate
for a percentage of people that supported Luigi assassinate? My guess is maybe 25%. Maybe. What's happening? Hello.
Okay, Mutant.
Oh, my guess would be 25%. I don't know what the actual number is.
Of the Dems.
Sure.
Probably my god.
Well, of the Dems.
All internet left people, it's probably.
Of all, well, internet people is different. Yeah, fuck it. I'll park it at 25%. I guess. Just because I don't think anybody over the age of like 40, generally speaking, is going to be like pro that guy getting assassinated, or that number is going to be really low. That'd be my guess, but I could be wrong on that. I don't know.
It's interesting. And again, I'm in New York, so like I don't have that bias, but a lot of people who are older than 40 and who also, like, I even have a lot of friends in medicine, surprised me. And this caused a lot of, again, debates because I was very against what happened there. Some of them were convincible. So, like, I'd have this conversation where they go, like, look, like, this is what the insurance company's doing. You know, them as a physician would say something like, I'm frustrated with them, too. And there's a lot of this that, like, is not just the younger folks in that crowd. And they're having this visceral reaction to, like, I think, a loss of agency, right? They're like, I can't participate in the system, and therefore I'm okay with anything that harms the system. But then when you point out to them arguments that I think are really good around, like, we can't root for, like, a virtuous leader. Like, you know, the virtuous version of the United Healthcare CEO isn't what we want. We want regulation around insurance companies. I think they move their position. And I think they find that compelling because they also don't want to live in a more violent society.
Okay, sure. I don't think I necessarily disagree with that. Yeah.
I think they'd want to hear those arguments, though, about insurance. Not, and again,
yeah, but
not
I don't
like
think they're
going to
get them scrolling
stream.
On social media. Like, my takes are not going to spawn.
But isn't that the only way?
No, maybe, I don't know. But my takes aren't going to show up alongside people who
why?
Are... I'm explaining, but you asked me why in the middle of my explanation. You stopped when I was six words in, and then you asked why as I was explaining why, okay?
My bad.
I think one of the complaints I've had over and over again about social media is the fact that the stuff that you see is the stuff that you kind of want to see that makes you feel good. So I don't think right now on social media algorithms, you're finding a whole bunch of arguments that are challenging the thing that you currently believe. I think you generally just get fed the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Like, if I'm a huge lefty, I'm not seeing a bunch of conservative arguments that are persuading me why communism or socialism is bad. If I'm a crazy fucking conservative, I'm probably not getting a lot of Hassan or Destiny on my feed as well. Like, people tend to get, I think, like, burrowed really deep into these, you know, holes of feeding you shit that makes you feel good.
Echo chamber.
But I think there's three interesting things there. One is people react to you, right? And so in the same way you react to people or they react to you, and currently we see that in content.
Yeah, but
I think
if they're reacting to me, they're not reacting to a strong version of my argument, and they're not reacting to something that would be persuasive to other people. This is why I say it's always, like, if you look at how Hassan conducts himself, and the people on the right as well, they're always reacting to the straw man or weakest versions of your arguments that they always have a 100 trillion percent knockdown of at that
but
point in time.
But it's funny, and I know this is, like, person-dependent, but, like, Andrew Wilson makes you... Or, like, he doesn't do that well. Like, he doesn't come across convincing when he represents your bad argument, because the truth is most versions of the bad argument sound like you're mangling the other person's words.
I disagree. So, like, I think they sound good to Andrew Wilson viewers, and I think they sound good.
But his audience is different.
Yeah, but that's the only one who's going to get fed his stuff. It's not like he's convincing my audience away and they're getting fed Andrew Wilson clips.
Right. So, like, let's say Hassan reacts to you on healthcare, and I know that probably wouldn't happen, but, like, that would be a way in which your take that would be considered to Hassan or to, let's say, other lefty creators to be, they'd consider, oh, your version of healthcare is not progressive enough, whatever. So they'd react to you, and some portion of their audience would go, look, I signed up for this creator because I'm anti-Trump and this movement feels good. To your point, they're following these people because it feels good. And again, this might be why they call themselves socialists or democratic socialists, because it feels good right now. And someone convinced them, Zoran, you know, painted a nice vision of, I want to be affiliated with this person, right? So they don't have strongly held opinions, but they're following these people who might react to you, in the case of the streamers, who then go, look, I might still follow this further left person that I've, you know, got attracted to in 2024, but now I'm hearing a position that's closer to where I historically stood or closer to people.
I understand that. I understand the words that you're saying theoretically, but in practice, everybody knows this, but this is why they don't watch opinions that could threaten their own platform. This is why you just told me earlier that you said that you have been watching way more Hassan than you want to because of me or whatever. And then, but I can ask you, like,
but I meant through you, by the way.
Okay.
I don't
fine. Through me or through any other thing. Like, when is the last time Mike from PA or Hassan or Frogan or, I don't know, literally any lefty on the internet has ever talked about me? When is the last time they platformed an argument in a coherent way?
They do it all the time. I don't know. You pull up clips of them all the time, no?
No, they don't. Hassan. They don't do it any of the time, ever. Never. That was usually the joke. No. The joke is usually that the framing of the opinion is so absurd. Like, when was the last time?
Oh, in a fair way. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Sure. I'm saying that, like, if you're somebody who believes kind of in market forces and you think whatever, but, like, maybe the left uses a convention on healthcare, Hassan is never pulling up a clip where I'm saying something like, I think that we've gotten great advancements from pharmaceutical companies in the United States, and I think that you could even argue that capitalism has contributed to this. I think the COVID vaccine is a great idea of it, but we should have the government rein these places in more, put some more... You don't hear that ever. You hear Hassan say, Destiny believes that big pharma is the solution to everything and wants poor people to die of healthcare. Nobody in his audience that could be convinced by me is hearing him say that. Go, wow, well, you know, maybe healthcare wants us to die. I kind of like that center-left opinion from Destiny. I'm going to go check that guy out. Like, there's a reason why they have a very specific strategy of how they show content of people that they consider oppositional to them. And it's never in a way that could be convincing, like, intentionally so.
So that's fair. And I will say, though, this is where I go to the whole idea of, like, again, not for, like, the sake of just being nice, but I do think, like, the question of having more inviting approaches to some of these buckets. I don't know, again, if that has to be intentional or if it's something that's just, like, in your head at all times. But, like, again, I think when you are making some of your arguments that will inevitably get clipped, not making it identity oriented, maybe with these people in mind, will allow them to at least hear you. Versus right now, I think a lot of the times, again, let's use the Palestine and Israel example.
Yeah, like, but they're only going to platform the arguments that they can twist and morph. Like, that's the point. It's not like, oh, this guy clipped you coaching.
But they can still twist and morph the Israel-Palestine arguments without you being as extreme. I mean, even let's just use me as an example. I got on the stream. I didn't bring up Hassan at first that got you all upset, but you still were upset with me because I did come in strong. And the first thing, and I think it's funny because I'm fine with it, but, like, the first few things you said were, all these pro-Palestine retarded positions and you're this or you're that. And you were joking and you were, you know, to you, you were joking. To your stream, you're inviting an interesting antagonist conversation. But let's say someone clips that, right? They don't listen to any more of your argument against me because immediately, again, you used a, okay, we need to be on the opposite side from an identity perspective. You're this pro-Pali.
First of all, the summary of our last conversation was crazy. I'm pretty sure the only time or the first person that brought up was on was I thought it was you saying that I was characterized, I was using his 9/11 comment to attack him, and that was the whole thing we went down. But, okay, I'm not trying to say that you can never optically frame your things better, but I can't literally have every single conversation such that single part of it gets clipped, that like every single part, like you can be nicer, you can be meaner,
of course.
But like I've gone back and forth on my career like several times to where it's like, I
think one of your values is your meanness, but I think the bucketing enforces upon people who you don't intend that they're part of the people you're being mean to.
I don't understand when you say the bucketing. Everybody has in groups and out groups, but like there was a time in there was a time in my career when I was far more amenable to the other side. That's when I was getting invited to talk to all the conservatives. And then after all the Trump shit and everything else, I'm like, okay, well, this is fucking retarded. And then they don't talk to me as much anymore, right? So if I hadn't had the time where I was being nicer to conservatives, what every single person or somebody on the right who's like you would say is destiny. If you were nicer to conservatives, I think that they would actually talk to you more and they wouldn't try to exclude you from their platforms. But and then I would let me finish. What I would say is that no, they will never platform me because they know I'm going to be so combative. And then another person say, no, you're just wrong. But now that I have the history of doing it, nobody makes that argument that, oh, you could talk to conservatives. You're just being they'll take you really combative. You've just been so mean to them. They won't, because that's not true, because I was really nice to them and not ultra combative. And that is when they platform me. But now when I've shown that I'm going to be more combative on the points and I'm not going to let them get away as much, now they won't talk to me. That's not an accident or that's not a mistake. It's a strategy from their perspective.
Oh, wait, hold on. It's interesting. I thought that at the time that you stopped going on those things, some of that, or I might maybe thought a majority of that was you also deciding it wasn't effective. Was it also them stopping inviting you?
No, it was exclusively them, because I was going to be more or less forgiving on arguments and I was going to make people stand on principle more, that it was going to be like, I'm not just going to let you say really retarded shit and get away with it. Like, we're going to actually dive a bit deeper here and I'm not going to let you say something retarded. It was exclusively on their end, of course.
That's interesting.
That's how you get people like
you
Tim
also
Poole.
Deciding that you no. weren't, because you said a few times that you had begun to realize that you were being too soft, but you were mostly talking about the soft versus strong.
I have no problem talking to people, but switching up the rhetorical strategy was the thing that I was going to do. I'm not going to be on these platforms and just being like the nice liberal, so that these guys, like I've said this over and over again, it bothers me that people
did they say you like they literally cut like because that would have to they would have to predict that you were suddenly going to like rhetorically cut them off.
That prediction came about when I sort of made the comments related to the Trump assassination attempt. That I was saying, like, these people are openly celebrating a guy who's basically a fascist. It's like, you can't be surprised if there's violence at your movement.
By the way, do you think you convince conservatives, the people who watch them? Because we have no way to know, right? But, like, I would assume you actually convince a significant amount of people, even as you were being a different version of yourself that you might have changed from. Because, again, to a lot of the point I'm making, I think a lot of these people have strong opinions loosely held who follow a lot of these people, right? They're low information. They found
maybe, but the issue that I'm running into when I'm looking at how these conversations are going that is challenging is, and it's hard to know like exact numbers, like I'm sure there are people I converted for sure, but like that sometimes I think there are different roles that need to be filled in the party at that particular time where I started to get really irritated. I felt like there was nobody that was filling like a strong center left liberal like area, and I wanted to fill that role more than just being like the nice liberal. The issue that I was starting to have was that if you look at the comment sections, you never really see people saying things like, you know, Destiny proves that Democrats can actually be pretty reasonable in things. These are good positions to consider. Rather, it's more, wow, you know, Destiny's not like other Democrats.
Though. That's like the Yelp effect. So like most of the people who comment on a restaurant are people who have like a very strong opinion. Like we actually, in some ways, like the people we're talking about are unlikely to be commenters.
Okay.
I know that doesn't feel satisfying.
No, it's not. True. You didn't let me finish my sentence. Okay.
Go ahead.
Which would have impacted the response you were given. The issue that I have is that people are not commenting that I'm making them have a better view of Democrats. They're commenting that I'm not like other Democrats. So I think that the position that I was representing in a lot of these adversarial shows, quote unquote, where I'm trying to be friendly, I'm not presenting this position that like, look, no, Democrats can actually be like way more reasonable than you think. It was that I was an unusually reasonable Democrat. That's the position that I ended up occupying for most of these people, I think.
Okay. I still will say the same thing I did, which I think most of the people who would be convinced are, again, people who wouldn't be the commenters because they're people with either strong or weak opinions loosely held. They might have started following these people in a moment where it felt good to them, but they are not as ideologically entrenched, and they're unlikely to comment and be like,
I think there are some of those people that I persuaded, sure. Like, I don't think it was all for nothing. There are definitely people I have in my audience that came from conservative audiences. I don't deny that. But, like, there are also times where sometimes you want to hear just, like, a stronger defense of your own ideology and a more stronger positive argument put forth for your ideology. So when to give me, can you say something? Because I know you're going to interrupt me as soon as I explain this. Say whatever you want to say right now before I give this explanation.
I literally wasn't planning on saying anything.
Okay. So if I were to go on these conservative shows and be friendly, there are two types of comments that I can get on a pro and a negative. I can have some people saying like, oh, like on the conservative side, you came over here and I listened to you coming over here and you know that, you know, I listened to you and now I listen to you more often because I heard you give a reasonable position. And then people on the liberal side can go, oh, I don't like that Destiny's just so nice on these shows. I feel like he's giving like so much leeway to these conservatives. On the flip side, where I'm at now, where I'm being way more aggressive, you know, I'll have conservatives say, oh, this Destiny guy is like fucking unhinged. Like, you know, he's not even worth dealing with. This guy's crazy. But on the liberals, I hear things like, oh, like, thank you for putting forth these arguments as passionately as you do. Like, I felt fucking insane. I'm glad there's finally a liberal who's at least like saying some shit that makes me feel a little bit more sane. So like you can occupy different areas in terms of your approach to conversation. There are different pros and different cons to each. It's just up to balancing out, you know.
How do you measure what's worth it? I guess like this is
a totally vibe-based thing. It'll be based on comment sections. It'll be based on other content creators.
No, philosophically, like as you go into a quarter or a month and you decide where to spend your time, how
that's what
you,
I said
like,
it's based on comment sections, it's based on where I see the media at, it's based on who I see talking about what. Like the reason why I feel like I'm in the strong like liberal position right now that's not trying to find common ground and break bread with conservatives is because when I look around, I don't know if I see a single other strong center left person like in the alternative media space right now. And in the mainstream media space, there are some that are kind of sort of getting there. Like there are some journalists that are there, but for the most part, that position just seems like not occupied at all right now. I just don't know who those people are, so I feel like I'd rather occupy that position.
How do we think about it's difficult because I think she with you especially on the topic of dark money goes a little crazy, but let's just use Taylor for a second because she's like obviously got some sort of a connection to Hassan. Again, the dark money thing is weird and very strange. But she also has interesting, like clearly her own set of values is far more on the left than the center left. However, in some of her nuances related to her reporting, she'll actually have some values that are kind of disconnected from them. So for example, a lot of them are very anti-big tech and are like, we have to break up these companies and take away Section 230. And, you know, again, there's a series of things that far left thinks instinctively or natively that are reacting from emotion. And she pushes back on them. And so she'll be like, actually, no, you're being a useful idiot to the far right or to people who are just, you know, kind of fascistic. These are bad arguments. Here's why they would suppress First Amendment, all this other stuff. I don't know if you've seen that part of...
Don't like any road we go down relating to Taylor Renz because I consider this person to be basically
fair enough. I guess like
crazy,
I can't think of an adjacency and maybe that's one of the problems. Who's similar?
Taylor is crazy. She's her own thing. Like Taylor is against Section 230, possibly like things, not because of anything related to fascism. I legitimately think this woman like might be addicted like in a clinically horrible sense to social media or whatever. Like I think there was an article that was released. I don't even know if this is a troll or not, but there was like an article released where, fuck, what was it? That she had, fuck, I don't want to misquote this, but it was like 11 hours of screen time a day on her phone. And she was like defending this because she said it's important for her to use her phone and shit all the time. And like the fact that she is like obsessively like showing up everywhere, still wearing a mask because she thinks that we're still like in a pandemic. And like, I think that she's like mentally unwell. So it's hard to talk about anything related to her in like a serious political fashion.
I think, by the way, she wears a mask because she's immunosuppressed. But I don't know
if that's true or not. I think she's either crazy or more likely she has some kind of like foreign political agenda that other people, media or somebody else, is like pushing.
So let's take though the example of somebody who, and again, the flaw might be that there isn't someone that we can name, but let's like talk amorphously and then figure out if we can name a person who doesn't seem as ideologically entrenched, but their values are currently more aligned with people further to the left. And to have some, you know, kind of this attachment or maybe like the ability to see a theory of the world that's not purely ideological and is more grounded in the argument in front of them. How do you imagine reaching somebody like that? And again, I know.
Oh, sorry. Taylor's just real quick. On this Wired article, Taylor Lorenz's screen time is almost 17 hours a day. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
It's interesting because that means it's also the phone, not just because the screen time doesn't count their laptops, right?
Yeah.
I like when she fights certain people on tech, so I have a soft spot, but yeah, she's also gone crazy.
Do you, though? Like, who does she...
Mark Andreessen, David Sacks, all the people you hate, she hates vehemently, and she's reported really well on them sometimes. She has me blocked on X right now because, again, sometimes we fight, but she is very anti the pro-fascist segment in tech.
Okay, I would have to see, because the way that she writes and when she's talking about tech, my feeling is she just doesn't understand. She just doesn't know tech at all. Like, at most, I would call like a pop culture tech reporter or whatever.
Yeah, the good news is she kind of sticks to that until she goes into things like Section 230 reporting, which she actually, her reporting has slightly convinced me. I think she, more than other issues she takes on, did her research on that, which is like the Section 230
stuff. I started to talk to Pisco about it a couple weeks ago, and it sounded like she couldn't even really accurately state what Section 230 was, but it seems like she's just against all form of like internet ID controls, which I think there are decent arguments for, but like she's like, I just think she's meant well, but I don't know. But okay.
But like that sort of person who, not that sort of person, again, who else exists in this world?
I'm going to interrupt. Okay, yeah. So I feel like we've been looping on this a lot. Like, he kind of, like, summarized it. Destiny kind of summarized it earlier a bit. Like, there's, like, this position he had where he was, like, a weaker liberal and he was, like, being more amenable to other people. And he was, like, capturing those, like, median voter type people that are, like, that you're trying to kind of say. Like, people who are not with, like, super strong positions. And, like, now he's, like, a stronger liberal. And so he's not, like, capturing those people because he's, like, being a lot more aggressive in his messaging against people he doesn't agree with. And it seems like you're trying to say that he should be like a softer liberal, and he's saying he wants to be a stronger liberal, but like
I don't think that's right.
That. You disagree with that point?
Yeah. Me? Or him? Oh, well, I think what he's saying, his argument is essentially that what he's trying to argue is that there is a group of people in front of Hassan who are currently occupying a position that's becoming closer and closer to the majority position of the party that resembles a lot of whole bunch of sopulous leftist economic position rhetoric stuff. And what he's saying is because all of my arguments against that sort of policy position are usually done through Hassan as an attack vector, that rather than arguing in favor of free markets providing solutions to different issues that are important to everybody, it just comes off as me being incredibly negative towards Hassan and attacking him all the time. So there are people who would otherwise be in favor of more liberal or free market approaches to solving problems that I'm not communicating effectively with because I'm spending most of my time either giving an incredibly negative view of Hassan or an incredibly negative view of socialist policy stuff in general.
Well said, and I'll just add, I think the and this is just downstream of what you said, I think this is now not just Hassan, but this is like a lot of other people in the party who, again, you know, might surround him or be adjacent to him, where it's only going to happen more and more this year and next year, right? So like they have such a stranglehold on the narrative right now in the party.
Sure, and I don't disagree with you necessarily, kind of, but what the difference, the point that I'm making is that like this is like a deliberate strategy. I don't know if you saw my conversation with Tim Miller. But like this idea of not talking to people who will critically challenge your positions is a deliberate strategy that the far left and MAGA have employed.
But this is where I go to the role to play thing that I said earlier and like the Ezra thing. Cause like, I don't know that the Mother Jones guy, for example, and he asked that good question in the middle.
I
was watching while you were, but like, well, he asked, I don't know if that
but he didn't follow it up at all. He let Hassan squirm out of it.
But
so
is
it was
that, is that what his responsibility is? Cause you'll also critique kind of like our, like the left's ecosystem or liberal media ecosystem for sometimes being too aggressive on a candidate. Again, it depends on the setting, but how do we, like, how do we see it? Because I don't think Ezra's role, for example.
You can be aggressive on Hassan, though, because, well, one, if you're going to ask the question, you're just asking the question. But then, two, it's not even about being soft or not soft. You're just, like, you're facilitating a lie to the audience. Like, I don't know if I don't know if you should do that to anybody ever, is facilitate a
just to help me understand what you mean, what do you mean by lie?
The idea that Hassan is concerned with social issues is a total fabrication. Hassan has said it multiple times on stream that he doesn't like social issues. He doesn't enjoy talking about them. He got a straight up question from a black guy who I think is supposed to understand this. I don't know if he's a fake black guy or his inner whiteness was showing, but he challenged Hassan directly on that standpoint thing. And Hassan completely and totally ducked out at the end by saying that he thinks that all racial issues boil down to class issues anyways, which was exactly the point that Hassan had from the quote that guy gave. The guy asked the question and seemed to not understand the answer and then just like went on. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess that's fine. That it's just, what's the point?
You know Hassan far better than I do, but like, don't you think he really believes that? Is that a lie? What? He thinks everything should collapse the class.
Believe that, yes.
So it's not a lie, and again, that person's responsibility.
Hassan is not
doesn't think he's lying. But right? He might think he's wrong.
What he allows Hassan to do is like launder his
goes back to Ezra Klein, right?
Like
Ezra Klein
is more likely. If somebody wanted to critically push Hassan on that position, right, the critical push would be you're critical of standpoint epistemology, okay? If you want to be critical of this and you want to say that there's no such thing as intersectionality, are you telling me that a wealthy black man and a wealthy white man would have the same experience in the United States talk about that example. That would be a push on that position. Not just saying like, oh, you don't believe in standpoint, and then letting Hassan ramble for fucking 2 minutes, giving some bullshit ass answer, and then walking away from the topic.
Okay, this goes to two things. One, let's use Ezra as an example. Ezra is more likely to launder positions than who's an investigative reporter that we all know?
Channel 5, I don't know. No.
Channel. Let's use Channel 5 because all of this exists, you know, on a spectrum.
Nick Shirley.
More likely to launder because his role, and again, this goes to my point about role earlier, his role is to facilitate a conversation versus put forth his own view. And we see that most in his content. And I think actually...
Sure, wait, real quick. This was my big criticism earlier, though. I don't know if I said this to you before you came on, was that facilitate a conversation shouldn't mean doing infinite PR slop for whoever comes onto your show. That's not a real...
What's the distinguish?
The distinguishing thing is whether or not you're asking somebody... did you see the notes that I took on the Tim Miller thing, like the position that I had related to different types of conversations?
I saw the conversation. I don't know if I saw that.
So basically, that's fine. So like in my world, there are like four different types of conversations you can have. You can have two friendly ones, and you can have
Are you sharing them?
No, I'm too lazy. Wait, okay. Am I screen sharing right now?
That's fine. I can see Twitter right now.
Oh,
on Discord.
I guess these were the notes that I had for this. But you can have four different styles of conversations where you can have I break this down into two different styles that are friendly. You can have the same team convos, you can have friendly conversations. Same team is you're doing PR slop. I'm here to give you layups. I'm here to make you look as good as possible. Friendly conversations are like, we have some ideological disagreements, but I'm trying to like build a bridge between us to demonstrate, you know, like how we're more similar than different, especially with regards to a third party. And then you've got your two hostile ones, which are adversarial conversations and hostile conversations, right? Adversarial is like, we're going to have a back and forth. I'm going to ask you some follow-ups. Like, it's going to be a tougher thing, but we're not like completely, it's not like a screaming match. And the hostile conversations are like a very, very, very difficult conversation. There's going to be follow-ups. I might ambush you with quotes or positions you've given in the past. Like you're going to be asked very difficult questions and you're not going to be allowed to squirm out of them, you know? For the issue that I have with people like Ezra Klein is they have these conversations that are ostensibly supposed to be somewhere between like either friendly conversations or adversarial conversations, but they all end up being same team conversations by allowing the other side to seine wash or launder or just make so much better their positions look, and they don't have any critical pushback at all on anything.
Do you think he doesn't push back on people?
Yes, I think Ezra has a huge problem with that. I didn't feel that most I've ever felt in my entire life was, what did you ever see the interview that he gave with Ben Shapiro?
Yeah.
Listening to a guy say that Barack Obama, the reason why he was hated so much was because of how out of line he was giving his opinion on the Henry Louis Gates thing before a charge like that. And there was one other thing that he gave. Like, that's a thing that in my mind, if you're a good faith political operative, what you would be asking right there is like, wow, that's crazy. So I can think.
But he's not a political operative, right? Because I think this is something.
Or journalist or whatever. I'm sorry. Somebody who's trying to do more than show you how to give the optimal blowjob to somebody that you're interviewing. That is not an answer that any sane individual could let stand. If it was to be about any other topic, you would never let that stand. But in the politics world, for some reason, everything slides.
I agree with you in a healthy democracy, if you want to call it that. But the interesting thing is, like, I don't know if Ezra, and you might go, this is a worthwhile trade, but like, would he get Ben or some of the other people that he gets if he, again, I wish it weren't what I'm about to say, but like, he somewhat has to position himself as the friendly conversation, not the adversarial, because to like, he's nerdcore, right? He's like, I want you to hear the fullness of someone else's argument. And until 2025, he wasn't doing a lot of, you know, he hasn't done it recently, but he was doing a lot of talking head in the beginning of 2025. I don't know if you remember that.
But the issue is this isn't a real conversation, though. Like, it could be, but it's not. Like, if it would have been him pushing back on that and making Ben actually justify that position, I would have liked to have heard that more. I would say,
I guess he thought of it as being about what was the beginning of their conversation about? Like,
I don't know, but it can't just be somebody giving stupid answers with no pushback. I can just watch Ben Shapiro for that. Why do I need to see Ezra Klein talk to him for that? Like, I just watched a Ben Shapiro video. That's what it was. Ezra Klein's conversation with Ben Shapiro was a Ben Shapiro video where he could just like, but now he's got the added advantage. Like, if I were to have another conversation with Ben Shapiro, did you see my debate with him?
Yeah.
Like, I would argue that my debate with him was somewhere
so soft
between friendly conversation and adversarial. It was somewhere between the two. But, like, if I were to have a conversation with Ben Shapiro today, a comment like the guardrails held, I would stay on that for 2 hours. Yeah. There's no possible world where we leave such an unbelievably crazy fucking comment about the guardrails held, so I'm going to vote for a dictator again. That's insane to me, right? So,
well, this is why the peer, like, who peers invites is such an unfortunate thing. And I know that's not in your control, but, like, that's the environment that allows for adversarial conversations by default, right? Because the hard part is who invites who to what.
Yeah, but wait, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that right now, the way that the media environment is set up, only liberals are the ones doing the sane washing thing. Only liberals. On the far left, when they invite people, it's either going to be PR for their own side or hostile slop towards the other side. And then on the MAGA people, it's only PR for their side, or if somebody's stupid enough left to accept, it's going to be hostile slop against the other side. Only center-left liberals are expected to invite people that are ideologically oppositional and then give them like a very friendly style conversation.
By the way, do center-left liberals other than Ezra exist? Like, I'm trying to think of who we would, because now at this point, like, Pod Save.
I mean, arguably all of CNN and MSNBC and Pod Save, these guys are all supposed to be like center-left liberals. But the issue is that
Pod Save has turned a little lifestyle, I'd say. But yeah,
what do you mean by lifestyle?
Like, a lot of their shows you don't watch are like John Lovett talking to like micro celebrities, and they'll still do politics, but it's like in front of an audience and is very casual. Like, they're turning into like a late night, I'd say, is like the vibe.
I don't know. I would have to watch more of them. Every time I've seen Pod Save, they're still very heavily a political podcast show, but maybe they do more
during
pop culture
Pod Save
stuff.
Particularly, yes, during that show. But I'd say, like, related to how they're also, you know, talking to people like Hassan, is a shift, generally speaking, that actually might be very much driving this shift too, is they began to have audience-oriented shows or other podcasts in their network that are a lot about them engaging traditional Hollywood figures, traditional, you know, kind of social media musicians, artists. And it's like Love It will do some of that, and some of the others will do it. And you get this blend where essentially, like, they're now part of what would traditionally have been considered, yes, you know, kind of late night as the vibe, which is I'll give you politics, but I'll also give you things that make you feel good.
Okay.
But so, like, other than them, that's one of the challenges. And again, I know it's supposed to be, you know, to your point, CNN, but is one of the issues here, and I don't see a solution, but I'm curious, like, who are we talking about other than Ezra that's giving people too much of a pass? I agree with you that the left isn't. Are there other people committing this sin in the center left?
I mean, I would say the New York Times and the Washington Post is, like, way too harsh on center-left candidates and way too nice on these, like, including people on the far left. So, like, that New York Times article, there have been a couple now that just attacked the fuck out of Newsom. I remember there was a whole issue with the trans stuff when Ben Shapiro was on his podcast, or Charlie Kirk was on his podcast. And then as of recently, they were attacking him, saying that he was being homophobic because of tweets that were being made on his account. Like,
right.
I would say that center-left, like, I mean, Kamala Harris and Walls are Democratic candidates. They were getting incredibly tough interviews on center left media. Meanwhile, Trump is getting slop tier interviews on Joe Rogan.
That's true. I mean, I guess it's hard because if they were given slop tier interviews, would we and or the left? Because it, like, Kamala was running for office, Gavin was making his first like national foray. Would we consider that fair?
Yes. People don't think about it, but they would.
Because so we sometimes want slop.
No. Everybody wants slop. They love slop. Yes.
Do you want slop?
No.
Sometimes.
Never.
Ever.
Well, hold on. Personally, I don't. But, like, right. I recognize that we need to have it for people to, like, have their teams to cheer for. Yes.
So how do we, and I might be making an error here, so this isn't like a challenge. This is a question. Is Mother Jones doing what they do, or PodSave doing what they do, doing something we think should happen? Or... Because I know you're oppositioned, and I might be oppositioned to Hassan, but they're not opposition to Hassan, right? So, like, are we surprised and offended that they do slop, or is it just inconvenient?
They're slop, but they're only slop for far leftists. This goes back to one of the classic issues.
I'd say less so than some of the others, but yeah, I hear you.
If you're willing to sanitize Hassan's reputation, like, if Hassan was any other
person...
They'll
sanitize anybody except for Hunter Biden.
Well, sure. But, like, I mean, how did they talk about Kamala and Biden... Not Hunter Biden, but Joe Biden. Probably, like, I've seen them be pretty fairly, like, quite critical of these two people. I would have to go back and check more for positive coverage around
that. As they're biased because of the conflict between those two teams that were in office. But yeah. But I guess, like, the point then is if one of the issues here is a gap, right? We have a gap between who's willing to have, who on the center left is having any of these conversations whatsoever. I think of it less as a critique of the media system, of the people inside of this ecosystem. and more of a gap that needs to either push somebody else. Like, again, I look at the Mother Jones conversation and I go like, look, this person seems smart. And to your point, they asked a smart question. They should have been able to do a follow-up. How do we accept, though, that like that person shouldn't, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have said anything, but at a higher level, should we be critiquing that guy or is it not his fault? And again, I go to the same question with Ezra. I think he was struggling in the beginning of 2025 when he began to do talking head videos talking about, okay, we're in fascism. But you saw him even tweet about this when he was asked about it. He's like, I don't know what my role is anymore.
Well, I think the question, I think that the issue that I have is people who are being duplicitous or dishonest about the role that they're filling. Like,
right.
At this point, I mean, like, I would still say it's bad, but unfortunately, you have to have people that are doing this. If one side's going to do it, both sides have to do it, right? This is a fucking tit-tat, whatever the fuck you want to call it. It has to be equal on both sides. When Trump goes on to Sean Hannity, I'm expecting it to be a glaze fest. Like, I'd have to shield children's eyes from the amount of loads that are going to be shot between these two fucking people jerking each other off. That's just the expectation. But Ezra and these people, they don't market themselves that way. Or like Joe Rogan, they don't market themselves. Like, in a way, I think they should have a different role. But like, I have far less of a problem with Sean Hannity than I do with Joe Rogan. Because Sean Hannity, it's fucking Fox News. They don't really necessarily pretend to be fair and balanced. Right.
Yep.
If I go to an impressive steakhouse and I get a piece of shit steak, I'm gonna be upset. If I go to Denny's and order a steak and eggs and it's a shit steak, it's fucking Denny's. What the fuck am I expecting? So my big issue is just that people like Ezra market themselves as these kind of like critical journalist centrists or people who are trying to do the right thing and asking the critical questions. But like, that's not really what we're getting. We're getting like almost Joe Rogan talking to Ben Shapiro, and the mismatch in expectation versus reality is the bad.
By the way, if we zoom in on him, what do you think is happening there? I know we'd be guessing, but like, what either in his thinking or breaking the process.
My guess is he just doesn't know how to navigate the media environment, and he hasn't thought much about like what does it mean to have a good conversation, and he thinks any talking is better than no talking. So he's just like figuring it out.
Because you think he should be more cognizant of who is part of the in-group versus who is trying to take advantage of the in-group. Is that?
That would be, with regards to the Hassan stuff, yeah, that would be part of it, yeah.
He's never had Hassan on, right?
No, yeah. He hasn't, but I thought his article about him was stupid. But I also thought his article about Charlie Kirk was stupid. Like, Charlie did politics the right way. Why? Because he wasn't shooting people? Like, what a stupid fucking... Like, I don't know if Hitler killed anybody personally, right? Like what a stupid point. I just think it's stupid.
But to your point, and it's interesting, and again, this goes to like the problem that's hard to solve, but all the people who would read that article, again, it's like, I think they don't have an opinion either. And so one of the advantages of these individuals who have maybe these slop promoting or slop generating approaches to media is their audience is the one that I'd want a center left position to take. Ezra in particular, I think, is challenged now by the fact that everything is so fascist. And again, this is where I think in 2025 he like said this several times, like, I literally don't know anymore what I'm supposed to do. Now he's accepting this not because he isn't center left, and when he expresses his opinion, he continues to sound like a moderate Democrat.
Sure, he is. I think he is. I don't think Ezra is like a secret socialist or anything. Yeah,
right. But I think he now feels like I must run away from everything that is close to this fascism. Maybe that's what's causing him to say, okay, I need to have these people on who are not only maybe closer on some of the issues, it might be an Israel-Palestine thing, or it might be a Trump thing, to where he might be moving or moved, but also he knows that his audience is moving that way fast.
I think it's just a matter of, it's a boring answer, but I just think these people just don't know how to engage in the conversation. They just don't know what they're supposed to be doing or how to do it. But this is part of this by design, because the issue is that like it can't be that. So one of the annoying things that happened between me and Vosh or me or Hassan, this is one of the reasons why people keep saying like, oh, well, there'll be a thing with Vosh, will you guys come back together, whatever. And my position is no, not unless he does a public disavowal of the crazy shit he said about me. Is that?
Well, Charlie, I wasn't listening at the time. What was the? I don't need a long.
He's just he's greenlit like people calling me a Nazi, a fascist, like all this super ultra far right or whatever, right? The issue is that if one side is being good faith towards the other side, but the other side is just being relentlessly bad faith against your side, then all you do is the other side just on net ends up looking better. Like if I'm talking about Hassan all day and Hassan is talking about me all day, like even today I'll still say like for the 9/11 comments, whatever the fuck else, like when Hassan is making a point, it's like, I mean, I guess, yeah, I kind of agree with this. I was the only person that defended Hassan on the whole streamer thing where he was like, you know, streaming is a harder job than other work sometimes, you know? And it's like, I know what he was trying to say there and I do agree, but obviously it came across bad. But if I'm doing that, then in my audience's mind, right, like my audience is all probably a bit further left than me, but part of the reason why is not as much anymore, but especially in the past, is I was like, I was very, very, very charitable towards people with different political views of mine. And I wasn't like standing as tall on my political views. I would give a lot of like stalemanning or explanations of the other side or trying to like pave over some of their critical errors or whatever. But on the other side, that is never, there's no reciprocity there. So the only thing I'm doing is I'm setting my own audience up to see these other people slightly better, and maybe even eventually moving over to those audiences. And then their side, nobody watching a tiny v tiny clip compilation on Hasan's stream is thinking like, oh, you know, this Destiny guy sounds pretty reasonable. I'm going to go check him out. That's just never happening.
Which, by the way, what do you think, you know, this is maybe philosophically too high level question, but like when they aren't being as charitable, I want to put aside, for example, for all the people who think like, oh, Bernie was cheated and the Democratic Party is the enemy. Let's put those people aside, because again, I don't think that's most people. But when a lot of the other portions of the left aren't as charitable, aren't as, you know, kind of welcoming of the argument. Again, this is going to sound kind of like too high level, but I'm curious on the nuance. Why is that? Like, what is it? Again, if they don't view the Democratic Party, if they're not one of the people who just feels they weren't maybe part of Bernie's crowd back when they feel Bernie was thieved or whatever, why else might those people not want to hold space? Is it a native?
Because you might lose. Because
unsafety?
You might lose. Yeah, there's
right, but like that's true of everybody, right? Like, I mean, do we have?
Wait.
Right takes
when you say that, when you say that's true of everybody, that's why nobody platforms true opposition opinion anymore.
The right does, but I was going to say they do it on purpose to verbally abuse the other people. And they
because think about when does the right do it? Yeah.
Decades. Yeah.
When you're going on Fox, when you're going on all these podcasts, like Trump, this is why I just said before, Trump didn't have a difficult interview going into the presidency. Trump was allowed to skip. He didn't have a single debate with Haley or DeSantis. And nobody in the Republican Party pushed him to do it. He had one debate with Kamala, hated it so much he skipped the next one. And nobody on the Republican side pressured him to do it. I don't think he had hardly any. I think he had one adversarial interview that I think he walked out of. I don't remember what it was. But other than that, it was all Trump slurping. Lex Friedman, Joe Rogan, every single podcast, Theo Von, every single one was on. It was slurp, 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 slurp.
So this is where I go to an interesting place that I know we want to avoid these people, and I do too. But let's use them as a useful lens into something else that's happening. So like the Tucker, Bassem, Cenk, all these, like, they're either aligning on like an Israel position or they're aligning on, you know, kind of anti-Trump position, right? And they're on each other's podcasts in a way that wouldn't have happened before unless it was for, to your point, this like purposeful use you as a useful idiot sort of vibe. Now it seems they're not challenging each other on where they disagree when they go on each other's shows. So like that's how they're getting away with it. But do you think that will eventually change? Is this like...
No, right now, this is the media strategy, and everybody will continue to emulate it until the culture or somebody pushes otherwise.
So you think they're making the same media choice?
Yes.
They know that they don't have to confront each other in that conversation.
Yeah.
Will they invite each other to have that conversation after some of these topics go away?
Like a confrontational conversation?
Yeah.
No.
Like, you don't think Tucker would invite Cenk to talk about healthcare?
No. Because look at, I mean, we can see when Cenk and Charlie were doing content together,
right?
It was basically to come together. And even Cenk didn't fully understand where the right was on that. Although, because Cenk was like an adversarial guy, he would debate people with different opinions. But Cenk went into that Charlie Kirk, the convention, expecting that they were going to have a friendly conversation. Whereas Charlie went in expecting an adversarial conversation, one step below. So that's why when Cenk went in, Cenk was trying to say, listen, like, we have our differences, but we both have a common enemy, okay, the billionaire class or whatever. But then as soon as he tried to build a bridge with Charlie on like that trans thing, I think, Charlie and the whole audience basically booed at him. And he was there to just...
I've never seen the lead up to that clip, but I know the clip.
Oh, yeah. It was basically, Cenk was like, we should have a drink. We can be chill. We agree on things, blah, blah, blah. And then when he tried to find common ground on one other thing, like, okay, listen, like, we may not agree on everything related to transfer, but like, these
this
people should be...
This is the one where Cenk is in the crowd?
Not in the crowd, but he's sitting on the chair next to Charlie at like a TP.
Maybe I haven't seen this clip. Okay.
Oh, maybe, yeah. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. Or look at when Anna Kasparian did a whole show with Glenn Beck. You remember that a while ago, right?
Yep.
These people are, in my mind, politically dissimilar in so many different ways. That was a whole jerk fest. They agreed with each other the entire time, right? That's what people are looking for today. Yeah.
I know this isn't like on Anna a useful thing about her, but like, let's use her as a vessel for a second. How do we not lose someone like that to madness? Because, and I'll say this, if we give them grace on the Israel-Palestine issue, so for a second, imagine that we don't want to, you know, kind of fight them on where they're going there. Because we might see that, okay, the party has this bimodal position and we're okay with both of them on Israel-Palestine. Everything else about her, to your point, at least up until a certain point, we're like, okay, this is a person on our team and she's ideologically opposed to a lot of these other people that now she's aligned to. What happens to her in whatever phase, and what could have been different.
I think the people that we've lost, so the reason why people do these friendly conversations is because what it allows you to do is it allows you to amplify the fuck out of whatever message you want and then fucking eject it out into the public discourse with just a stunning amount of
But she had platforms already, right? So why did she decide that part of her switch had to be to become antagonistic to a lot of people who were her previous,
I'm the only person on the planet that's above this, okay? Nobody else besides me is above the media algorithm hole.
I'm also above it.
The issue is that, like, if you have a political party that has, like, a fucking amplification chamber that can sit there and think of any fucking opinion that you want, and you let it cook in this fucking chamber, and it fucking gets more and more and more and more and more and more and more velocity, and it's getting faster and faster, faster, and then you open it, and it comes out with all this force, like, it's unstoppable. That's it. And that's the benefit of, this is why nothing ever breaks out of the center-left sphere when it comes to talking points, but everything breaks out of the far-right sphere. If Trump wants to say that that image of me as Jesus was doctored or whatever the fuck else, he's allowed to go on 15 different conservative shows and say that. Everybody's got the talking point, and they're ready to eject that out of their space and then inject it into the algorithm. So now if you're a normal conservative, you're seeing, like, okay, well, what happened with this Trump picture? Well, I'm seeing 52 different people say that all of it was, like, not a big deal, and it was, like, somebody doctored it or whatever else. Okay, I believe that. And then who's giving me the opposite talking points? One, I'm not even going to see it, so, because it's all in my algorithm, and then people on the far left are never going to break into my algorithm, so that's it. We've got it. But on the center left, you don't have that amplification of any talking point ever. So when Kamala goes onto some place, it's not to amplify a talking point. She's going to get attacked by everybody, even on the center left. So I think when you ask questions like, how do we lose, like, Joe Rogan, or how do we lose, like, Anna Kasparian, who's ostensibly on our side for things, because there are certain talking points that get amplified like crazy on the far right or on the very far left, and those are the only things that break through to people's algorithms, because it's just being reinforced by so many different voices. With no variance.
Your point on that, it's a big topic. I've called in about this a while ago. Like, the tech right that formed, I blame them. Like, I think it's underrated how much their demographic normalized Trump going into 2024 election. It was the All In podcast, which is, you've seen all these people at this point, Chamath and David Sachs or whatever. And it started as a VC podcast. Like, if you go back to COVID, they literally are, like, doing it because of COVID. They're talking about tech and investments. They even say January 6th was awful, and they're like, Trump can never run again. Like, they're on that vibe. Then it's, you know, kind of, they go through a crypto phase. But by the time they, you know, we round up to about 2023, when Sachs had tried to get DeSantis to be the candidate, it didn't work. He had to give up. And so then they start moving their money and their, you know, kind of drumbeat to Trump and normalizing him. And it was exactly what you said. It was, not only did they use the FOMO, the reason people listened to them originally is because the venture community is very small. It's access to deals, access to data sort of thing. So that's why you start to listen. And then you start to get this velocity of the same thing, but it was very small pieces. I think this was actually brilliant. It was like some small thing about what was going on in New York, or, you know, Silicon Valley had, you know, kind of a breakup with its mayor. And so, like, they were constantly talking about, okay, why is San Francisco like this? Why is San Francisco like that? And in that environment, it's the same thing that we're talking about doesn't exist on the left. There was nothing else on the
It does exist on the far left, but not on the center left. Yeah, go on.
That's right. But, like, the challenge is all those individuals started off of a lifestyle conversation. That's one of the things that I think is kind of...
Well,
that's
sure, because now that we have the algorithms giving you news podcast things, now you can get people down into these holes where they will start to get exposed to that content. Before, you didn't really see that. If you watch stuff for, like, media or culture stuff, you're just not going to get very much into the politics world, because how are those even connected? Like, think of a person who watches, like, CNN, or I'm sorry, think of a person who watches shows that talk to, like, musicians. Like, what is your route to the politics world? Like, you're just not engaging with that content much at all. But now, like, a certain shocking headline, if it's amplified by enough people in a certain political group, can break through, and now when you click it, you're starting to see more and more. And then when you see it, the people that are hosting the podcast you watch also see it, which makes them want to talk about it. This is, like, where your Joe Rogans come from, and then they're starting to believe it. And then that cycle, like, if you have an amplification chamber that could throw something out there, like, you can always shift and mold and get people to believe whatever the fuck you want, and then all of the other idiots that are useful idiots, unfortunately, will amplify it because they're, like, they're genuine believers. Like, looking, I don't know if you saw the Michaela Peterson thing we watched earlier today, but, like, I actually think that her and her dad, I think, are actually genuine believers. I think they're fucking crazy. I think their brains got cooked by social media, and her dad is, like, fucking rotting in a basement somewhere, force feeding himself sirloins, thinking that his all meat diet is going to cook what sounds like a hardcore benzo withdrawal that he's not getting real treatment for. And I don't think that's because they're trying to, like, fucking grift hard. I think they're genuinely fucked on social media.
I'm interested in that. Like, do you think their audience is perceiving some of that too, or are they hook, line, and sinker?
No, the audience is, they're all part of the same system now. Like, the audience sees all the same shit, so they believe all
You don't
the
think, like, 50 to, or maybe 25 to 50% are kind of going, this feels a little too crank for me?
Maybe on them, just because they push stuff that's a little further outside the norm, but nowhere near as many should be. I think for the most part, like...
So if I go back to tech, yeah, the reason I asked that question, if I go back to tech, if the All-In podcast is slightly different and it's the top or one of the top three tech podcasts, I think that has changed for tech. Now, part of this is because I think the labor class in tech is kind of confused. They all work for these AI companies. There's this whole fight internal to tech as to whether AI safety is going a certain direction. They don't like a lot of the Trump stuff, the immigration stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people, you know, are themselves immigrants. And so finally, I think 20 to 30% of that audience, and you can see it on Twitter, you can see it in the backroom conversations, how founders talk about this podcast, it shifted dramatically.
Sure.
And I think it was kind of like this moment of like, oh, you guys are too much cranks for me to continue following you, and especially when they began to, you know, kind of be highly connected to the admin after the election.
That might be true, that there might be some people that stopped watching, but the problem is now the politics discourse and community is so huge. Whatever smaller audience you're going to lose by becoming a huge politics person is probably going to be more than made up for by whatever the new like community that's now accepted you.
That's true. They became basically a mainstream business podcast, but they shed back, and I don't know if this will, I think this will manifest in 2028. They shed back a lot of the population that had gotten from the center and, you know, kind of the center right and left, because a lot of the people who went along for their ride were not ideologically aligned with them at all, and they didn't expect a lot. I mean, even they didn't. I mean, they had Trump on, and Trump, while he was on, I don't know if you watched this at the time, if you were aware of them at the time, but like said, oh, we're gonna stick a visa to every immigrant's college degree, and so we're gonna invite them all to come back and live here after their student visas, and that was a complete lie, obviously.
Sure.
So they were somewhat surprised by it, but like that group to me is highly capturable. I think about all these people who, like, again, they followed someone for a lifestyle choice, and again, the All-In podcast is a good example. They followed because tech and venture is highly, you know, insular, and then over time, you know, kind of whether or not they shed or not does become a factor of whether or not they're looking and see something else. In the case of All In, I think it's an aversion. So they start to stop listening or start to view them oppositionally.
Uh-huh.
But I think they're grabbable now, right? And so, like, do they start to listen to another podcast? Do they go back to being a centrist?
Well, again, when you say grabbable, I agree that people are grabbable. I need an analogy for this, but it's like if you have like a room where everybody's like standing and you're trying to capture these people and you're trying to generate ideas in these other rooms, imagine you have like, in one room, you've got like 20 different voices that are going back and forth trying to like shoot ideas into the main room where everybody's at. And then you've got another room with 20 people who all are saying the exact same fucking message. It doesn't matter what your message is. Those people are always going to break through the noise from the other room. So on the conservative side, you can convince these fucking people of literally anything just because they are so lockstep and uniform in all the messages that they have, especially and there's a whole bunch of different psychological reasons why this can work today. It could be foreign interference from Russian bots that are trying to amplify this. It could be the social media algorithms that drive people into certain things. It could be the lack of knowledge that people have because they overestimate their competency in politics because they're good in business. There's like a whole bunch of psychological reasons why this works too, but the only way to capture those people can be captured, because I think anybody can be captured by any idea, because nobody really knows anything about any of the shit that's being talked about ever at all, right? That's why you have a Republican Party today that is defending global tariffs. That's an unbelievable position from a neocon perspective, right? That's why, like, there are so many positions that everybody believes that are just so on their face, obviously crazy, right? Like, Republicans are good when it comes to the debt and the deficit. That's just like, you can for 2 seconds investigate that and see that that's a total bullshit position.
No, a lot of my friends in tech, the tech investor community, you know, these VCs, like they're counterpositioning and contrapositioning on literally everything they told me they believed a few years ago, and they'll admit to it. Like, I'll go like, oh, tell me why exactly you think tariffs, or tell me why you think this immigration policy, and, you know, I'm doing it over email so they know it's not, you know, kind of it's not being broadcast, it's slightly different. But to your point, it's like it's a complete admitting, and they're, you know, kind of aware of it, of like, well, no, here's the outcome that's now justified, or here's the worst thing that I believe happened during the Biden years, and therefore, you know, I'm more okay with this change, and I think he's doing it in a good enough way.
Sure. Have you ever seen me talk to that Tom Bilyeu guy?
Oh, the glasses guy? I can't say.
He's like a billionaire guy. He made the Quest company or whatever.
He's a billionaire?
Or if not, he's like a millionaire or whatever. Yeah, because I think he sold his stake in Quest for $500 million, I think.
Jeez, I had no idea his background.
But like this guy, if you listen to him talk, he's got like a good thought process that he can elucidate. He can talk through a whole bunch of things or whatever. But like when it came to politics or Trump, like this is just completely and totally lost. And like I'm even challenging this guy, like, what are predictions you're making? Because like when we've talked every single time, every single prediction you've made has been completely and totally wrong. Like it's none of it is right. And everything I'm saying has been true. Has this adjusted your way of viewing things at all? But the reality is he's just consuming a whole bunch of news. It's getting fed to him on.
So I've heard you talk about this about him, but I haven't heard him, like, I can't I don't like listening to him, so I haven't listened to it. When he doesn't hear you, or like when you kind of challenge him on in terms of like, has he been moved by either time or by you, what does he say in those
There's always like a deeper rabbit hole to go down. Like everything with these people, because they're not really justifying it logically. They're just getting fed like talking points from the other side, and like, so they can believe anything, like as long as it's being fed. And when I'm talking to people, it's like the first time they've ever heard anything in their life. Like if I had to do
what
like
is an, it about you though that isn't as like pincering in his brain to cause,
because
like,
because when
like
I'm telling these people things, I'm telling them this, they're probably legitimately genuinely hearing this for the first time in their entire fucking life. They've never heard this point before. Like, I genuinely believe, given like doctors evaluating the debate performance, everything else, like I would put money that I could debate that Donald Trump has shown more signs of being senile than Joe Biden. I feel that very strongly.
Right.
When I tell somebody that opinion, even Democrats are like, you're fucking crazy, right? But then if I ask a question, show me one example of Biden being quote unquote senile besides the debate, it's nothing. There's not a single thing that comes out. And I can talk about like 20 different things that Trump has done that's fucking almost incomprehensible in terms of things that have been reported and said about him. But yeah, it's just like, yeah, these are just, or the fact that like, oh, I think Democrats are better with spending than Republicans. That's a crazy idea. Most people wouldn't accept that. Yeah, because
it's funny. This is just a feeling, but I know it's like, it's a hard feeling to strategize around, but I have the feeling that the voter would be different than Tom. And like,
I don't think so, unfortunately. I think Tom is similar.
You don't think the audience captures some of what's doing it to him?
Yeah, but we're all audience captured, because you're audience captured on social media, like obviously in a different way, right? He's audience captured, or that he's literally making money by saying these things. But there's also some amount of like ideological pressure audience capture, where if you see a thing being said on social media over and over again, do you really want to take an oppositional position to that? Who the fuck are you to take an oppositional position to that? Like,
that's true, by the way. I do think a lot of these voters, that, you know, again, the ones that I bucket as calling themselves socialists or whatever, like a lot of it, again, is that social pressure that causes them to fear being part of the outgroup, and which is some of the reason that, again, I call them grabbable.
Sure.
By the way, just a small note, and Hassan calling that guy a centimillionaire or whatever. Not excusing Hassan using that as an interesting foil, but the reason he probably brought that up is he's constantly criticized. He sold a bunch of Stripe stock, and he is a lefty that is being attacked by the tech class. So all the venture capitalists and all the people in tech attack him because he's, again, more progressive than they are. And
sure,
they use the fact he's made all of his money to...
Well, yeah. But I think the reason, the main reason why Hassan is using that term is because we just want to differentiate them from billionaire. Which I just
you're going to hear it a lot, though, about him, just FYI.
Sure.
Real quick. Final thoughts, just to give someone else a chance to talk.
What? Well, first of all, I'm gone after this, so who the fuck else is coming in?
All right, well,
join in the conversation.
Jesus. Okay, sorry, yeah, I keep going.
Wait, am I still final thoughtsing?
No, you continue on. Damn, Bang is a hater. Go ahead.
No, he likes it. He's good conversations.
No, I appreciate it, though, Bang. I'm sorry, yeah. But no, I'm probably going to sleep after this, so it's 9:30.
I think it's interesting, because we go to, like, this... this other area of the tech folk. And I think that, you know, again, we can talk more about it, but I think this audience is really important for 2028, because a lot of these people, again, FOMO and kind of idolization that happens inside the tech industry caused them to change all of their politics. These are, and again, the workers are all still blue. But the founder class and the venture class, again, reasons of FOMO, reason of capital allocation, of access, change their tune. And now you can see some of them swap back, but some of them are occupying this, like, what I call bad centrist position, where they'll go like, Trump is bad, but then they'll, again, on a policy basis, on a, like, even birthright citizenship, they'll have changed their tune. Or on universal healthcare, they'll change their tune. They, like, hold now this, like, weird, okay, I have dropped the liking of Trump, but I'm holding on to some of these things. I think some of that's identity, right? So they can't fully admit and say, okay, I need to give all of this up. It might take them some time. But some of it is also this, like, I don't think they have something else to latch on to. So now it's this, like, I will keep these policies. I will find other media on the right to affirm some of what I tried to believe for a few years and didn't work. But let's zoom in on them for a second. What do you think about whether we need to engage these sorts of people? Like, are we in a place where 2028 is a get out the vote campaign? Or are we in a place where 2028 is a...
If you want to capture anybody right now, if things don't change, then the way to do it is you have to have an overwhelming amplification chamber to get your message out. If you have that, then you can do anything. But it just comes down to whether or not you can do that.
Why has no one succeeded in the way that you have in being consistently viewed in center-left alt media?
Well, what do you... I don't know if I would say
I'd say like Podsave is too lifestyle.
Well, because it depends on what you mean by success. Like, my success is I want to be viewed as having my, like, political
okay, you know, I specifically mean, I guess, like, having consistent viewership.
Well, I mean, you can have consistent viewership, but people want to either grow, or people want to be more like...
So do you think everyone who's been aligned with you just basically has fallen off for audience capture reasons?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to exist in the center left.
But even your, like, even, I guess I don't know that much of who else would have been alternatives, but like even your Orbiters, for example, never got that much of viewership even while they were still aligned with you. And there's
because
something
there's not
there,
much
right?
to because there's not much to grow in this like political world.
I think it's an audience demand.
Well, because you have like a whole, because think about it, if you join like the socialist sphere or if you join the magosphere, you've just gotten access to like a fucking huge audience of people that are here to slop and do everything with you, right? When Trump gets attacked, look at how many of these centristy types, how many of the alt media people, how many people in the cabinet are here to make the craziest excuses for Trump in the world. And then look at when somebody on the far left gets attacked, how many people are they willing to tell you, like to your face point blank, like Hassan never shocked that dog. That's a lie. That's a Mossad lie. Like, unironically, people say this shit. Like,
those are far left creators.
Yeah, but they have that. They have duplicated the infrastructure of the far right when it comes to media messaging. They decide on what the talking point is, and then all of them will amplify the talking point. And then once it hits the algorithms, that's what people are seeing and consuming. It's exactly the same, the way that they operate. All of the interviews that they do with each other is exactly the same. They're all PR tier interviews, the one that I just watched with Hassan. And then it's basically just a matter of like everybody on MAGA and everybody in the far left duping the center left dipshits into seeing if they can get favorable interviews with them because they don't know what type of interviews they're signing up for. Or drawing center left people into their shows to literally fucking mentally rape these people because they don't know what they're signed up for. Like the two examples I give obviously are Ted Cruz had no fucking idea what he was walking into with Tucker Carlson. And Slotkin had no idea what she was walking into with Breaking Points. But that's because the center left just haven't identified.
So emotional. Like I'm not sure if it was even effective. But let's zoom in for a second on Luigi. This is gonna be interesting. Like again, if you go on social media or if you're like in New York at a bar, if you go to let's call it the masses who are traditional Democrats, it's weird how much acceptance you get. And, you know, kind of like, again, some of it's a loss of feeling of agency or personal sympathy from a healthcare perspective. But like, do you think those people believe that strongly? And maybe what I'm really asking is like, I look at that and I go, I think most of those people, and again, it's like how long the conversation has to be, could be convinced that their position today is wrong and they shouldn't hold it. And they should hold some alternative, you know, kind of well put together position that still addresses their issues.
Theoretically, but you have to do a lot of...
Or do you think they're captured?
No, I mean, they're captured for sure, but it's possible to break them out of it, but not right now, not with the way that the media environment is. Because to start breaking somebody out of that, you would have to work through so many fundamental positions, like, why is healthcare expensive? Like, if you're if you think that healthcare is expensive because there's just greedy people, or because people just want to watch you die or whatever else, then that person is gone. How are you going to convince a person otherwise? And then it's got to be a question of like, why don't some people have the healthcare that we would argue in the United States they deserve? You know, and is every single story a good example of why healthcare is failing in the United States? You know, like if you see somebody who, I remember one time I got a mole checked out, and you know, after the doctor looked at the mole, he told me that he thought it was like a little bit worrying and that he would recommend a biopsy, but he wasn't sure if I could afford it because I don't have insurance, right? Obviously I have money, so I was like, yeah, of course. But like in my mind, I don't think anybody should ever have to think like, should I get this thing that looks cancerous biopsied or should this be covered by something? Like it's crazy to me that walk out of there, right? Or dental stuff is a huge example of like people with rotting teeth who have no alternative. Like these are things that shouldn't happen, right? But like people will take that and say that's really bad, but they'll view that the exact same way as that one story that blew up where there was a guy, this blew up on Reddit and Twitter, I saw this, but everybody's talking about this, a guy was denied life-saving treatment for his cancer because his insurance company wouldn't approve an experimental treatment that involved a guy with stage 4 lung cancer getting a double lung transplant in order to save his life. And it's like, holy shit, this is way, like he's already exhausted the whole standard of care, he's got a ton of care already, and this is like an experimental treatment that, like, it's like Jesus. So like, but when you've gotten all these opinions fed you over and over and over again, whether it's by the far right or the far left, right, far right is all of MAGA, or the far left, like by the time somebody wants to debate you on whether or not it's a reasonable position or not, you have to fight through all of the media they're consuming. And as soon as you're done talking, they're going back to all that media as well. So it's
right. Well, no, and on a personal basis, I've convinced friends by like talking about, okay, where have you been rejected in a claim if they have been, and they'll go to it and I go like, oh, let's talk about why that rejection happened. And like, usually it'll be something that is experimental or, you know, kind of off label in a bad way. And I go like, do you think I should have to pay for your experiment, even if I think I want you to have that experiment? And it usually, again, gets them started thinking. But it goes to something, I think you were the one to introduce me to this concept. I remember talking, this must have been a few years ago at this point, about the like the black box of how things work. I don't know what the label was, but like—
Somebody emailed me this, like,
yeah, like the issue is that people don't understand how things work and therefore they ascribe a bunch of things as to why it might be happening. Mm-hmm. Like that's essentially what's happening there, right? Is like they don't know how insurance works, and whether or not it should be the way it is, they therefore ascribe a bunch of...
Sure, but while this is true, and this is where liberals have gotten trapped, and I don't know if anybody's ever going to break them out of this trap, is people get stuck too much on analyzing, like the black box. Like, I got stuck here. Like, well, why are people able to do this? And all of these things play into it a little bit, but the reality is it's just the media environment and the fact that you can have an amplification chamber that is in lockstep shooting these messages out across algorithms that are all in lockstep uniformity.
Although it's funny, on the Luigi stuff, I don't think a lot of people were like Luigi good in the creator class. I think it surprised a few of them.
I think it might have surprised some of them, but I think the issue was that they've spent so, like... You can do a slightly deeper analysis on this. I think the issue is that people have spent so much time amplifying the sloppulous populist rhetoric that, like, there are some things that you're not going to be able to pull your community out of unless you, like, I think you could, but you would have to do, like, a hardcore amplification campaign to convince them why Luigi killing the guy was bad. But that's going to be really hard when almost everybody has been lockstep, like, attacking pharmacists and everything else, right? Like, Trump really wanted people to believe that the vaccine was good because of Warp Speed, but he spent so much time undermining and attacking all of our institutions, pharmaceuticals, medicine, and everything else. That was just, like, it was probably a bridge too far.
When he's the only one, like, you aren't the only, but, like, it requires this, like, comfort in being canceled by your own audience or whatever, like, attacked by your own audience that I think you have to go through a few times. And I don't think most creators, even if they've gone through it a few times, are, like, past being highly fearful of that in that moment.
Yeah, but you're also, not only do you have to worry about that, going against your own audience, you have to go against the whole community, and other content creators can step in and fuck you hard on that. So right, if you right. are saying, like, well, actually, I don't think that we should be on this path, guys, like, not only is your own community going to fight against you, if you're part of a larger community, that whole community is going to come for your throat as well.
Well, here's the huge issue. I think this problem is going to get worse. So again, AI, you know, in tech, we have now these data center votes that are happening. You have obviously the violence that's being justified as it relates to all the AI stuff. Like, we are now going to a place where more of this is going to happen, as in there's a black box, there are people frustrated at the black box, the creator class and even the companies, and this is actually a critique made inside the industry, that OpenAI and Anthropic are so bad at talking about their products, their marketing, the impact to the economy, the impact to governance. And I think they're actually trying to be truthful. This is like the one time tech companies are like trying to be like, we don't know and you should all be warned. And they're kind of being reprimanded for it because people are like, oh, why do you keep going on different interviews and saying 50% of entry-level jobs might be wiped out. And I think it's because, and I talked to so many people at these companies, they believe it and they're trying to go, we don't know all the solutions, or we think government should be part of these solutions. But that's actually being used to attack them. So now you have, like, the companies can't say anything. The voters are really frustrated for a variety of reasons that, again, have to do with black box and being captured, to your point, by an amplified message by people who are oppositional to these companies. And now we're going to go into a place where this is probably going to become, over the next 2 years, so much of our politics, 80% to 90% of politics. I predict even you will be covering it to 80% to 90% of content. Like, again, not asking you this question literally, it's just something I'm thinking a lot about. How do we not walk into a place where that's just a trap, a big version of what we've just been talking about?
Well, until something has changed about, like, how we do, like, this is what I was saying before, like, I think that it should be banned. I don't even know how you do this, but, like, news stories shouldn't be able to be influenced by giving you an algorithmically generated timeline. Like, it just can't be that
news stories shouldn't be able to be influenced by you, like, being put in the algorithmic.
Like, if I watch a house video on YouTube Shorts, it's going to feed me house video after house video, right? That's fine. It's media. Who cares, right? But if I look at a story that says that Trump has the largest dick in the world, I'm going to be fed a million stories about that. That's not okay when it comes to politics, because it's fucking people's brains up when it comes to how they view.
We're never going
to
get that, though.
What? Well, I know, without that. Like, imagine if you went to, like, a biology class and the things that you learned about every day were the things that made you feel the most comfortable and the best about yourself. And even if that's not true, like, you could never do, you can't do, like, you can't teach people based on scientific, you can't teach people science based on popular opinion of what things should be for what, like, makes us feel the best. We'd all be flat earthers or whatever the fuck else. But that is what we're doing with our politics. But for some reason, we expect it to turn out differently, but it won't. It's not going
to. So there's this interesting adjacent conversation. Do you remember, I don't know how much you, like, actually interacted with him versus just one of his podcasts, Liron, the Doom Debates guy?
Yeah.
So he had Noah Smith on, uh-huh. And Noah, like, hates him because a lot of tech hates him. He's kind of annoying. And so
Noah's
really
mean to him. Noah Smith, or hits the guy?
The guy.
Oh, okay.
And Noah Smith, but less. Okay. But the guy especially. And Noah kind of took out, he had this conversation where Liron kept, like, pushing this specific thing he thought Noah was saying, and he at some point Noah like interrupted him. You actually might find watching this interesting, because Noah goes, "You are failing at your mission. Doom debates and everyone in your community, and there's a community of AI safety people who think that this is all going to kill us, are failing. Nothing is changing. You're giving the wrong message. No one gives a shit what you say. Everyone's skeptical of you." And they basically talk about what we're talking about, but in a very specific way, where Noah's trying to like tell him you need to switch strategies. And the whole thing behind what Noah was saying was, you're not affecting policymakers, and you're not making anyone think about this because A, you are not being, you know, realistic about the risks. So that's one of the critiques. Is like, hey, you need to. He kept caveating this because you have to, but he was kind of saying we need to have the first accident, or you need to like make the accident really clear, because that's when policymakers will care, where there's something to fear.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me as an adjacency. And then the second thing he was saying is like, you guys keep saying this thing around safety and doom, but all your alternatives are like pause AI. So pause AI development is one of the, you know, kind of broader initiatives, or, you know, stop it, or other versions that are seemed to be unrealistic, either literally or because of geopolitics. But I think that first thing is interesting. And I don't like this, but like Noah's essentially saying fear-based marketing needs to be your approach. If you actually think this is going to kill people, you're currently having a bunch of people who will like be have milquetoast conversations with you about their percentage, their PDOOM, but you're not otherwise motivating anyone to action, because a billion people can come here, and Noah had been on his podcast before and had actually moved his PDOOM since and said, you're still not getting anything to change. I've changed my PDOOM. You've educated a bunch of people, maybe whatever, but nothing's changing.
Yeah, this is kind of the same issue with climate change, right? Yeah. Whereas people were saying, or still are saying, or whatever, that the world is going to be over in 10 years, or at the very least, that's what the feeling is. And if you can't even point to a concrete single negative thing that's happened as a result of climate change, like, I feel like there were a few key events that happened over the past couple of years where people started taking climate change way more seriously. One was, or at least there were news stories that were breaking through to the cycle of media. One was the fucking, I don't know if it was LHR, Heathrow, or whatever. There was some airport in the UK whose like fucking runway had melted. And then there have been a couple heat waves where like a lot of people are fucking dying, and like fucking France, you know, across Europe or whatever. There are a couple stories that are kind of breaking through where people are like, you know, this is kind of weird, maybe not good. But without those big stories, it just feels like doom mongering without any.
But what's interesting about that is like there's also the same thing around AI, which is like, we're also not giving people next steps. So like, if they hear some of these big stories, one of the challenges is like, okay, what do I do about it? And I think the same thing's happening in AI. It's like, okay, if you're going to tell me I shouldn't bomb Sam Altman's house, obviously you shouldn't. What do I do about it?
Sure.
If you shouldn't ban a data center, what should I do about it? And there are a bunch of these, like, and again, this goes to probably the same thing where we're like, how do we get people to like listen to positive vision instructions? Mm-hmm. But for example, in AI, I think there's a lot of leverage, for example, in either labor class. Again, at these tech companies, a lot of these people actually disagree with their bosses as to what needs to happen. And from a like ecosystem perspective, a lot of the AI community, again, as an analogy, would probably be really lenient toward other regulation, not banning data centers, but also not pausing and not, you know, kind of being too hyper-accelerationist, right? There's like all these things they would say, okay, these don't work for me, so what can I get? But there's no one offering the what can I get. And it has to happen after the fear moment, right? It's like, oh, I scare you about something and I tell you what to do next.
Sure.
But we don't, like, do we artificially generate that? Like,
well, part of the reason why, I mean, again, I think this goes back to, I get really reductive on this. I think it goes back to understanding the current media environment and how you capture attention. It's just about amplifying a story and then sending it out to everybody. The more, like, vague your story is, to some extent, like, generally the better off you are. Because if I give you, like, a specific concrete thing we can do, either one, we'll start to do it, and then either the thing will get solved or it won't, and then if it, whatever happens from there, I can't talk about it as much. And then two, that concrete thing is harder to drive like a whole movement around. Like if I give you more nebulous or more esoteric like reasons for why things are fucked and why things are bad, it just gives you a lack of direct action and more of like a general support for a group of people that you can kind of like harvest that indefinitely. Did you ever see me when I did that debate in Austin and Alex Jones was on that panel?
That
was a different one. That was a different one. But there was one where I was in Austin doing an argument, and I think at the end of one of his fucking ramblings, I think I asked him point blank. I was like, okay, what do you want your audience to do about this? You're saying that the whole system is corrupt, everything is rigged, everything's fucked. What should people do? And he really didn't even have an answer. He didn't have an answer. And it's kind of crazy to think that he's been doing politics everything for so long and he doesn't have a single actionable thing. But like, think about it. What does an actionable thing help you for? Like, you're just trying to capture attention. You're trying to get people to watch your shit more and more and more. You're not really trying to solve any problems. You're not really trying to do anything. You're just trying to get people to watch your shit. And I think that's a huge problem. It's one of the reasons
funny.
Why...
It's the same malaise you're talking about with the Petersons in some way, right? It's like, oh, and you know, it's funny, you talk about autoimmune. I have an autoimmune condition that's relatively new. One of the things that's really funny about it, I remember a moment in time where like when it physically manifested, I was like, oh, this is real. But for a lot of people, these things don't physically manifest in unique ways or novel ways. Like mine, it's like obviously caused by something.
Uh-huh.
Versus, to your point, it's like an amorphous thing where I can begin to blame all of my problems on it, right? It's like, oh, if I think this is happening to me, suddenly my depression, my inability to do my job, my brain fog, whatever else these people might have, and that they've heard this thing once, everything can be ascribed. And to your point, I think that's exactly what happens in a lot of these political arenas. It's like, okay, you need the thing to be amorphous because you want everyone's problems to map onto it, because then your message gets amplified. Whatever they experience in their personal life, they, you know, get fired the next day, they suddenly blame it on corporations because you've given corporations this very amorphous, unspecific, you know, kind of targeted surface area.
Yeah.
Which might actually be an interesting way to approach positive visions, but it probably wouldn't work.
I mean, theoretically, you could lie to people or play this game to get them to move in a certain direction. Yeah. But I mean, one of my underlying arguments, I don't know how true this is, but is that the only reason why the system has been able to carry on like that is because Democrats haven't done this. So
right.
Republicans
done what? Either positive or a negative amorphous?
That they have tried to deal with concrete problems. That Republicans have this luxury of being able to come in and fuck shit up and not really govern for real, but Democrats kind of have to bring the country back from the brink. Otherwise, we would just be fucked. Like, if we had a Trump-like leader between both Trump terms, like, I don't even know if Trump would have had a country to come back to. But because Biden set so much stuff on the right path, Trump was able to come in and now, like, stir a whole bunch of shit up and do a bunch of crazy shit. And then the next Democratic leader is going to have to come back in and clean shit up again, which will give the next Republican leader the opportunity again to fuck shit up because the Democrats are still governing. If Democrats embrace the media's pressure, I'm kind of telling them to embrace, or that they kind of have to for survival, like, I don't know if the country survives that because now we have no government. Like, it's just over.
100%. Well, and this goes to where I think a lot of the arguments that I see in like the captured sphere of things, I go like, okay, like what do we want in the next 10 years, not just the next 4 years? I think a lot of people think about, okay, the post-Trump era as being, okay, yes, we can roll back some of the things, we can take down the signs if we win power. But ultimately, it's an argument as to what you want to have happen over the next 10 to 15 years in your life and in everyone else's life. B, they think in these timelines. And so again, I think like tech right, for example, is something we should be more scared of than MAGA right now, since Trump is going to hopefully be done. And they think in these timelines where as long as they keep their amorphous coalition together with their amorphous set of ideas, they will return to the same initiatives when they're back in power. Whereas to your point, we won't. We will be on a new concrete thing we need to do to either reverse what they did, or it'll just be a new pet issue we have and we'll like celebrate about that. And sometimes that's good because sometimes that gets us incremental progress, which is obviously good. But that incremental progress should be on a roadmap, right? It's like if it's a bunch of parallel incremental initiatives that don't lead us to an overall better place, I think it's more problematic because now we just have, you know, kind of a disparate set of things we want on. I think that's somewhat what, you know, again, the far left is a critique of Obama's era and of Biden's era for these reasons. I don't like the critique. I think they're wrong about what's possible, for example, during Obama's terms. But if I give them a little bit of leeway on it, it is because we did not continue, you know, kind of Obama's amorphous project. We splintered very quickly after his term was over.
Sure. But I mean, the thing that I point to there kind of has to do with that media environment thing. But I think the thing that I point to there is that Republicans have done a really good job at building long-lasting institutions to carry forth conservative thought when you look at their think tanks. So if you think about like the Heritage Foundation, or if you think about the Federalist Society, like these are institutions that are constantly iterating on and working on conservative thought. And I don't feel like there are good analogs on the liberal side to these things, right? Like
there aren't, or the organizations exist, but they don't do the same work.
They're nowhere near as influential. Yeah. But like, and whereas, even like Republicans, like they are like, even though Trump is a fucking lunatic or crazy or whatever, like he still makes more or less appoints the people that like the Federalist Society or whatever else, like that they're telling him to appoint. You know, that's where all the judicial picks everything come from.
Well, I've even asked some of the people that I know in some of these think tanks, I'm like, where's our version of Project 2028? Like, why is no one trying to like coalesce all of like the disparate thoughts into an idea or you know, kind of document? And they literally have no answer. And it goes to like, oh, we expect someone else to do it. And I go, oh, hold on. Like, there's no, like, you either all need to be talking to each other so that you know who's doing it, or one of you needs to give it a shot. At this point, we're giving up the game. Very quickly on the California thing, we can talk about it later if you want, but like, this is one of the reasons I'm also against this other candidate, that is getting a lot of tech prowess and funding behind his campaign. Are you familiar with the current state of the primary beyond Swalwell?
No.
So there's the two Republicans, but then it's Steyer's really, you know, kind of taking the lead. Mahan is the mayor of San Diego, and he's well-liked in San Diego, did a good job probably as a mayor, but he's very, let's call it traditional Democrat, who has said absolutely, or next to nothing, his team has argued with me on this, about Trump during his term, and even now as he's like running in the primary as a Democrat.
Okay.
And I think that's like a straight deal breaker. I think like the fact this guy is up for the seat of California governor, where we may need Newsom-style leadership on national initiatives, other alliances with governorships, and this guy hasn't said anything about Trump. Mm-hmm. I go like, look, we have to have an idea, you know, as a party, as to what we're also, you know, kind of doing in between these terms, or as governorship, or, you know, mayoral and judicial. And again, to your point, a lot of this comes out of think tanks on the right. I think this should be like a deal breaker. I assume you agree, but this is what I want to talk to you about at California. Like, if this guy gains traction, would you also be like, that's a zero in California? The guy has to, the Democratic candidate has to be anti-Trump, be willing to say out loud that he'd do what Newsom did with the gerrymandering, be willing to like fight tooth and nail with other governors during Trump's term? Or are you okay with a technocrat who calls himself a Democrat, is liberal on social issues, by the way, is funded by some of the people who fund the tech right? Like, do you find that potentially acceptable?
It would be hard. I would have to look so much into this to know what it means to be anti-Trump and what it means to be funded by like these weirdo tech right people. It's hard to give like a concrete without digging into it a bit, I guess. Yeah.
Can I come this week and talk about it?
I would have to look him up. Or you can send me a video to watch about him and I could try.
But I think it's one of the most important things. If he gains any more traction, you know, this goes to like, I think there should be a grand center left project, mm-hmm. where we go, there's some things that, you know, you need to meet the bar. And again, some things we'll agree to disagree on. And Israel-Palestine, I think, in the party is one of those things that, you know, is agreed to disagree on. But I don't think any governor should be elected that isn't, you know, kind of willing to put a fight. But
yeah, I think I'm most likely going to agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, any other points? Can I go to sleep?
Go to sleep. But I will say my plea to you is consider the people who call themselves socialists who aren't really.
Sure. Well, I mean, I would say I already consider that, but I understand what you're saying. Okay. All right. Well, have fun. Be careful.
Thanks, Ivan.
Yep. Good night.